about.
It's not a pretty story. It's a story of heartbreak and hell.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
I live down the street. I was just checking out the fire.
What do you think of it?
It's pretty cool.
I want to hear what you see, and I want to see what you feel. You know what, guys? My job is to communicate with you, the people.
Because if I don't communicate, guys,
I communicant.
1, 2, 3, 8. I'm gonna knock you out like a first date. This, me, naturally, even with steroids, you won't look like me.
And now.
How do you think Kanye West feels about all this? Don't know her.
Our feature presentation.
Don't know her. Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Tuesday, the 16th of June.
Or March, whatever, whichever one it is. I'm a judge, man.
I'll make plenty of mistakes on my own. Thank you very much.
How's everybody?
Good.
Hockey's over.
Tell me about the hockey.
Guys.
Hockey's over, so that sucks.
Tell me about it. I was binge watching the rest of Aquarius last night.
Ah.
So I did not get to see the hockey, but I understand it was very exciting.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, first home win since 1938. So it was good to see them win at home. I like to
wow.
see that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is this true, by the way? We're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, by the way, who won last night. Was this first of all, this was the only game that wasn't decided by just one goal, which is a miracle how close the whole series was. Mm-hmm. Second of all, is it true that the cup almost didn't make this ceremony at the end of
yeah,
the game?
Yeah, it was touch and go. It was so bizarre. I saw a tweet from a guy that said, I bet the cup is totally sweating, running through security right now.
So the tradition dictates that the cup cannot be in the building when the game begins. So that's what they do. They bring it in during the third period. So where was it? What was the hang-up? I know there were some weather issues. Did it have trouble getting to Chicago, or was it already in Chicago and had trouble getting to the United Center?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
But there was lightning and some flooding and a bunch of problems happening, which is interesting.
Can you imagine, because they won it at home in front of their fans, how long they would have waited?
Oh,
probably all night.
Absolutely.
All right, look, it's not here yet. We're not going.
We're fine.
That's just the way it goes. Yeah.
I bet the cup handlers, though, just must have been like, oh, come on.
Oh, yeah. They were dying. Absolutely.
So what would they do in the case of the cup, let's say, being stuck in New Jersey or something? What would they do?
Wow. I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah.
Seems like there must be some sort of backup plan, I would think.
Like they just bring out a chalice. Like, just pretend, you guys.
It's
cool.
Make one out of aluminum foil.
It's good.
Out of foil. Exactly. Someone just working back there in craft services.
Well, we have a new problem in America, you guys, and that is that it is impossible for any reporter, Ali, you will relate to this story, any reporter on the street in front of a crowd being able to do a live cutaway without a-holes mobbing the reporter and screaming effer in the pee. I mean, that is the new currency of America now.
Yeah.
Did that ever happen to you? Doesn't seem ideal.
It never happened to me. Right when it was getting big, people mm-hmm. would start like kind of milling around my live shot. And I don't know if you've met me.
Mm-hmm.
I can be a bit much sometimes.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Are you just slapping them down?
I would, so
Allie would
say
fear
of God. Yeah,
she
I'd
just
yell at
put
them.
Put it out there.
And they're like, wait, that's not how it works. I'm like, oh, it's how it works with me.
And it's especially difficult when you're talking about a large crowd, a drunk crowd, and a crowd whose team has just won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So here's a little bit of tape. I've beeped it as best I can, but fingers on the button, everyone.
So long, Addison and Clark, that everybody knows so well. They were packed with fans watching the Hawks game tonight. Phil Rogers is there. He's live at the Cubby Bear. Phil?
All right, so poor Phil is standing there. It takes him a couple seconds to realize they've thrown it to him, and you can hear the excitement in the crowd when they realize we are on TV.
Addison, we've been all over this neighborhood for about the last half hour, and in fact...
All right, that guy that you hear in the background, the guy that goes, yeah! He's the guy who's leading the chant.
Sure.
See that we have a very interesting crowd here in front of us. What you're seeing is the edge of this crowd.
By the way, all those beeps were me. They weren't the TV. That was on the TV.
All right.
Clark Street is packed with tens of thousands of individuals. This is actually on the very periphery of that crowd. I can tell you that the police have done an amazing job.
Now, again, Allie, I defer to you as the TV veteran.
First of all, I expect more from the Cubby Bear patrons.
What's going on in the minds of the people who are just screaming as loud as they can on television?
Oh, they're wasted.
Yeah, they're
drunk.
There's
nothing going on in their minds except, oh, my God, we're on TV and we're wasted.
They don't care at all about what the guy is talking about or anything like that. They just are they doing it because they want people at home to see them, or are they not even thinking that far ahead of the fact that the image is coming out in somebody's living room?
I think a few of them probably texted a friend and said, dude, DVR this right now.
Right.
I'm going to be
on.
I'm keeping these crowds under control for the most part. Clark is one set of people. Addison another.
Taylor's doing an amazing job.
All right, here's where the reporters just pull the plug on him. They're just like, look, we can't hear you. It's terrible television. We're taking it away from you. Right in the middle of the guy's report from downtown.
Keeping his composure with all of that going on behind him. That guy can hold him on. Bad idea.
Yeah, no.
I was gonna say,
Phil.
We all know when to turn the cameras on.
Yeah.
He's attractive, but the officers have been doing a great job.
All right, so 5 minutes later, they throw it to a different guy who's out in the street, and he's the guy who's, you know, showing the excitement of people as they're starting to leave United Center and head out into their various neighborhoods.
The main thoroughfare back towards downtown has been shut down, but slowly traffic is beginning to move again here on Madison, and as you can tell, some people have had a little bit to drink tonight.
All right, they've overwhelmed you for the moment, Ben.
Okay, Ben.
We'll take it back here.
All right, so there you go. That's a little bit of the post game in Chicago.
Let's try somebody else. Nope. All right, let's just continue.
And you know what? They'll send reporters out to the next big event.
Yep, every time.
Yep, they will.
That's good television right there, kids.
That is. All right, let's talk about today's Kevin DeBeecher, shall we?
I believe God's word says it, and that settles it.
Okay, I'm not sure if this is in the Bible or not, but we do need to discuss the Mexican Nazi cheerleaders.
Is that Chip's new band?
It should be. That's a thing. That's actually a thing. And I'm not exactly sure how or why. Also on the program today, we have Eli Roth, which we love that dude. He's talking about Eli Roth Presents The Stranger. E3 is in town this weekend, the big electronics convention. And Ashley Escada from CNET will be in the studio to tell us all about that.
I can't wait for Ashley to come in. She talked about something on her little Tomorrow Daily show this week about an oven that recognizes the food that you put in it and cooks it accordingly without you having to make any settings.
My oven would be so confused by food being put in it.
Yeah.
That's all
but for
I'll
those
say.
People who do cook at home. For those people whose life doesn't revolve around the next drive-thru, you put a steak in your oven and your oven goes, yeah, I know what this is. I got it. I'll take care of it. All you have to do is push a button whether you want it rare, medium, or well done. And you don't have to set any timers. You don't have to set any temperature. Is that insane?
Wow.
Yeah, I feel like there's something going to go wrong there.
You Ashley's put steak got all, in an oven?
She's got – or however you – whatever you cook. I don't know what that – it's just an example. I don't know anything
nice.
About
Let's
steak.
Say you're
but
cooking
do
guys.
You, do you put steak in an oven? I'm seriously asking.
I have no idea. I haven't had a steak in 25 years. I don't know. I honestly don't know how they make it. But Ashley's got the hookup on all the cool electronics. That's the point.
I would suggest that you need to stop giving examples, Bean, of anything.
Of anything. Maybe
yeah, just
so.
Don't give examples.
Well, how do you cook steak? Is that a stovetop thing?
I do barbecue.
Or can you cook it in the oven?
I do barbecue. I don't know.
Something to look into.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe a crock pot? Like just put beef in a crock pot? Just What's set it
happening?
And leave it.
All right, hold on.
How there are clearly a lot of people who eat drive-through
steak. Let's see here. Well, this says on the grill,
crock pot.
This says you do it on the grill,
right?
Yeah,
but that's an outdoor thing, right?
Well, yeah.
When you say barbecue, so what do you do? I mean, you don't cook outdoor year round. I'm sure.
Yeah.
How do you cook a steak on the inside?
We live in L.A. That's why we moved here.
Here's pan frying. You can pan fry a steak,
yes.
It says here.
Okay.
So that's stovetop. So maybe you're saying not – oh, here's how to cook a perfect steak in the oven. So it looks like there's lots of different ways to cook steak, you guys.
See, I was right.
Chip's dying.
I'm going to have to go through this tape later today and just discuss. Yale Stone?
Yes.
Who plays Morello on Orange is the New Black in the studio today. Very excited about that.
Excellent.
And Petros Papadakis and Ralph Garman have one more look at – The Bachelorette Report that's coming up today. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:54.
You did say you can make mistakes on your own.
That's right.
Hey, it's Tuesday morning. Ralph Garman steps in. Time for our first look at the showbiz beat. What's going on, my friend?
It was fascinating earlier.
So now I had a taste of what the listeners get.
Which is just rage.
It was stunning that three grown-ass adult people sounded like they were just dropped off a boat from someplace.
Yeah.
Well, I think in our defense, Ralph, the subject we were discussing was how to cook a steak, and it turns out there are numerous common ways to cook a steak, so yeah, it's not like there was a right or a wrong answer.
No, you're wrong. There's a common answer. You grill a steak. Everyone grills steaks. To say you can make a steak in the oven is like saying, it's like one of those novelty things, like you can bake a pie with a hairdryer.
Lots of people cook steaks in the oven.
Yeah, but they're...
Lots of people cook them in a pan on top of the stove. Lots of people grill them.
That is grilling. Grilling is in a pan as well. But okay. It'd be like... Well, do you put it in an oven? I don't know. Maybe a blender? Do you cook it in a blender? I don't know. Is it a fish? Is steak a fish? Have you not lived a life anywhere?
Don't look at me. I said barbecue. That's how I do it all the time.
You were the closest.
All right.
The other two are like, what is this steak I hear of? food steak that the people speak of.
But I didn't get barbecue because barbecue is outdoors, right?
That's
you mostly cook outdoors.
There's a grill, and you know most people have a grill. You can grill in on your stovetop as
right.
well.
And that's called grilling. That's different from barbecuing, isn't it?
Okay.
No, you're
that's
right.
That's why I was confused by Kevin's answer, but I was more confused by Allie's answer, who didn't even know where to start. Allie thought they were done with lasers.
She was put in a crock pot. And
yeah, a blender.
Did you just walk around with a blindfold? I was like, I don't want to know anything. I just want to stay here in this room and not know anything about anything.
I was confused by the stove part. You don't put a steak in a stove, so I knew that.
You do it. You put it on a stove.
In the oven. The oven. That's different than a stove.
The vast majority of people don't put a steak inside an oven like you would bake a cake. Most people don't do that.
Right. At least I know the difference between an oven and a stove.
Crock pot. Oh, in the oven. Oh, put it in the microwave.
You can't. You still can't use the F word, Ralph.
I think
still
I just did.
Forbidden.
I just said it.
I do what I want.
Well, that's your choice, I guess.
See? Rodney's got my back.
I don't know.
No, you don't. I am not feeling the need for another Halloween movie. And yet, here it comes. Variety reports that there will be 11th film in the Michael Myers franchise to be called Halloween Returns.
Again.
It's written by the guys who gave the world the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th Saw movies, so they've got a pedigree.
All right.
So I'm sure Mike will be calm and nice this time around, because those Saw movies were kind. No word on the potential plot for the next film. Let me tell you about the plot. He goes killing people, and then they kill him, and you think he's dead, and then at the last minute he comes back to life again.
You are all going to die tonight.
More sequel news. Pitch Perfect 3. Boom. It's happening. It's in the works. Yesterday, Anna Kendrick posted the news on Instagram that she will be in the third in the franchise, and Rebel Wilson's coming back, too. And Rebel Wilson, let me tell you something. She's going to act all sexy and stuff, even though she's a large girl, and that's going to be just against purposes there, and that will make everyone laugh, because that is funny.
Is the public eating up Pitch Perfect 2? Is that the takeaway here?
They made a ton of money. It was like a $70 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's lots of
money. Well, I guess we could have seen this coming.
More sequel news. Maleficent. Angelina Jolie's movie about the witch that taunted Sleeping Beauty, I want to say?
That sounds right.
Okay.
Apparently, Disney has hired a writer, and they are developing a sequel to that film as well. Now, the first film cost a bunch of money to make. $180 million was the budget on Maleficent, the first
one. Wow.
However, and this may surprise you, I knew it did well, but I didn't know it made this, $760 million worldwide.
Wow.
So you can see why they'd bring that old witch back. That, I mean, Maleficent, of course, yeah. Not Angelina Jolie. And George Michael's back in rehab. The German magazine Bild says that he checked himself into a facility in Switzerland to help with substance abuse. George has not made an official statement about this, but those close to him say he is in rehab and in dire need of it, so they're applauding his move. They say, will it work this time, rehab? Well, you got to have faith, I guess. So we'll just wait and see.
Does he have a father figure that's helping him through this, Ralph? Does the article say, or?
Does not say. Okay. Rehab's hard because he's just a sleeping in.
Oh,
but
here.
He had to leave. He had to leave word for them to wake him up before.
How are you going to finish this?
Before he go-goed.
Douchebag!
Today's celebrity birthday is John Cho. We love John Cho. Don't we? Don't we love John Cho?
Very much
I love John Cho. I don't want to speak for everybody. Eddie Cibrian. He is 40.
John Cho is Mr. Chekhov in the Star Trek movie?
He is Mr. Sulu. He'd be Mr. Sulu. Yes. I don't know if you're familiar with John Cho at all. But he would be an odd choice for Chekhov, yet an appropriate choice, oddly enough, for Sulu.
Much Chekhov, better cast.
Yeah, that's probably why they cast him.
The way you do it.
More Russian than Asian.
Yes. John Cho can be cooked in an oven, too, by
is
the way.
Right?
If you know this, yeah. A lot of people prepare him in an oven.
What about a crock pot?
Eddie Cibrian is 42 years old. Missy Peregrine. Oh, I love Missy Peregrine. Remember her in Reaper?
Yep.
I loved her in that. She was adorable.
Yep.
What's the matter, Bean? What is the matter when I mention the TV series Reaper?
You know I'm afraid of that, Ralph.
Why, Bean, don't fear the Reaper.
Shut up, Allie.
And actress Abby Elliott is 28 years old. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Hey, listen to this. All week long here on the world-famous K-Rock, we are giving away passes for a private studio tour hosted by our own Ted Stryker to check out the new Fast and Furious Supercharged ride at Universal Studios Hollywood. That sounds like a pretty good deal. Your chance to win coming up later this hour. On the Today Show this morning, you will see a sit-down interview with Rachel Dolezal. You guys know that name. She is the woman who has been talked about almost nonstop on TV for the past week. She runs the Spokane, Washington NAACP chapter. And it turns out, although she has been identifying herself as a black woman her entire life, it turns out she's white. What's up with that?
That's a good question.
The NAACP, by the way, to their credit, they say she's a strong advocate for African-American rights, and she's doing a great job, and there's no requirement that you have to be black to have that job, and we're fine with her. But there has been so much controversy over her that she resigned yesterday and handed over the reins of her job to her lieutenant. And it kind of has brought into question, can you just say that you're black if you're not? And a lot of people are saying, no, not so much. You kind of have to have that in your blood. What do you guys think about all this?
Well, I think if you're going to say you're black, you should be black.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's important.
And I think if you're getting different things handed to you, given to you, jobs, that type of thing, according to race, which not saying the NAACP job is, but if you're getting things done under the guise of something specific, you should probably be that thing.
So you think it was convenient for her to be black when she wanted to be black? In other words, when she was trying to get into Harvard and things like that?
Absolutely, because I don't know if you heard that she sued Howard, where she went, a predominantly African-American school, sued her because she was white back then. And she felt she was being discriminated against. So you can't pick and choose your race according to how you want to make money.
Well, it was revealed when her parents were interviewed in Idaho, where they live, and they said, no, she's always been white. And they brought out pictures of her as a looking just like you, Allie, by the way.
Yeah.
Just super, super pale with blonde hair, just looking like a any other little white kid. But very controversial issue, very difficult for some of us to discuss. And that's why we've got our go-to man, which is our friend Bruce Endicott. He is with the organization Coffee, and he talks us through difficult social issues like this. Bruce, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
And Coffee, again, for our listeners, your organization stands for?
We are the Caucasian Organization for Friendship Enveloping Everyone. Okay. And we are mostly a social communication organization. Where we, a group of largely white Protestant Americans, talk to the other ones about how to deal and navigate choppy waters of race and ethnicity and gender and socioeconomic class. We believe we can be a bridge between our class and the lower ones.
Okay, they're not lower and they're not other.
They're other ones.
Just all people.
The ones that are not us.
So have you been getting a lot
of... Sadly for them.
Have you been getting a lot of calls this week about Miss Dolezal?
Oh, yes. A lot of people are confused about how to feel about this. And understandably, it's a very confusing situation. Here's a young lady by all accounts, pretending to be one race while in reality being another. And it brings up some important questions, I think, that we all have.
Like what?
Like, how did she get her hair to do that?
What?
Well, that seems pretty low on the list
not
of what's
really.
Important
it doesn't
about
even
this.
Look like, it's not a perm. I can't tell. What it's not, is that a crimping iron? What did she do?
Well,
it
I don't
really,
know. That...
It looks really different than her other hair, which was straight and blonde.
Right.
Okay. I don't know
that
a lot about
be,
how...
you know, the problem number one, though, I don't think.
Maybe not. But two or three then.
Okay.
Just, first thing that caught my eye, I was like, damn, that girl has some crazy hair.
All right. So we don't know what's going on
we
with her hair.
We don't know what's going on with her hair. Second.
Okay. Yes.
Bronzer, tanning booth, you tell me. I don't know.
Again, these are just, you know, the outward appearances that
yes.
we're talking about.
You're damn right they are.
Right, okay. But I think what Ali's suggesting is that it's what's more important is race identity is more important here. And how we should feel about somebody who wants to be black.
Well,
I mean, she's
it's bringing up
black
a lot
man.
Of anger, I think. Because there is another white woman losing her job. And frankly, a lot of white people are upset about it, I think. I'm not really sure. I haven't done a lot of research.
I don't feel
topic.
Like you've done any research.
I have. I looked at a picture of her.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And then someone told me that she resigned or something.
Right. She resigned. So she didn't even lose her job. She voluntarily resigned. She didn't
even
have to
worse,
quit.
White women walking away from jobs. I'm enraged.
Bruce, okay. You're our expert on things like this that get a little complicated.
I know. I was on vacation when you guys called. I really wasn't keeping up with the news. But here's how I see it, just off the top
good.
Of my head.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
There's a white girl mm-hmm. who pretended to be black to work at the NAACP.
Right.
And to that I say, where's the harm? Harm? Where's the harm? Is that what I...
Are you reading this? Is that what's happening, Bruce?
No, I'm just trying it out for size. I think as a black woman, myself...
You're not a black... What are you talking about?
If I were to pretend to be a black woman...
Okay.
I would not pick a high-profile job like the head of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington.
They would call... bring scrutiny into your life.
Exactly.
I think okay,
I wanted to travel under the radar, as it were.
Yes.
I would pick a less high-profile job.
Maybe
however,
best if you don't use examples? Or okay.
However, are there black people in Spokane, Washington?
A few.
That's what I'm saying. So maybe she thought she could just fool them all. You can fool some of the people some of the time.
I have heard that.
But you cannot fool... all the people, all the time.
Bruce, I'm sorry. I feel
and
like you're
some
just
some black
riffing.
People. You cannot fool them at all. However, some black people are really good at fooling you. I played Three Card Monte once in New York City with a black gentleman. I had no idea where that card was.
Well, that brings it into very sharp focus for us, Bruce. Thank
That's
you.
That's what I'm here for.
DJ Omar Khan.
Good morning.
Sound like you were going to say something else.
No.
Good morning to you as well, sir. Omar, of course, is in charge of all of our sound effects and music and production and jingles and everything that he does. He's hard at work in the other studio. You can also hire him to play your party, your prom, your graduation,
hold
birthday.
Hold up. Listen to what we're about to talk about before you decide to hire him for a
That's
gig.
A good idea, too. You go to djomarcon.com if you want to hire. He does a great job on the ones and twos. But he came to us yesterday and he said, guys, I think it's going down in my neighborhood. And we're like, what are you talking about?
I've got troubles, man.
Tell us the
I've got troubles.
Tell us the first time when you went, what?
Okay, so I have a neighbor. He's been living there about a year and a half. They're Asian, super quiet, really don't hear anything from them. The only I've heard two things from him, and he was kind of a jerk because I was having people over.
Right.
Okay, so that's the only kind of interaction I've had with this guy.
You don't
guy.
Know him at all.
I don't know him at all. Right. We're just friendly.
Okay.
Okay.
I do love that you were the one with the people over making all the noise, and he was the jerk. I do love the story
well,
so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, he's the jerk, for sure. So on last Thursday... I was upstairs in my bedroom, and I was filling my pool. So I peek out, and I just don't for the water level. And I notice the wife in a hazmat suit, a white hazmat suit, full on with the hoodie on. And it's about 85 degrees out. Okay?
A white hazmat suit.
Right.
That's like the giant like onesie that they wear with the boots and
the
whole thing?
Yeah. Like Walter White wears to make meth. Right? So she steps out and she goes to the corner where her sprinkler valves are and she turns them on and then she skips away and goes back into the house. So a total of about 15 seconds.
Okay.
And when because it totally like freaked me out, when I was at the window, I did one of these moves like to get like because it totally freaked me out. Like,
you didn't want her to see you watching?
Right. So I hid. And then I like, she scurries
Omar's
in.
Omar's hiding in his own house.
Okay. Yeah. So at first I'm like, okay. And then I kind of start really thinking about it and I'm all like, what the hell they be doing that she needs to wear a full-blown hazmat suit on?
Huh. All right, let me stop you right there. A number of things come to mind. Painting comes to mind.
Who wears... Yeah, nobody... It's a Thursday evening. It's like 5 p.m. Who's painting at that time? And who wears a full-blown hazmat
suit? People paint
suit?
Whenever they have the
I don't,
time.
No, listen.
It's a weekend job, okay?
But right, I think most people just put on an old T-shirt or something. They
absolutely.
Don't go full hazmat.
Right.
Most people, you're right, Kevin. Most people do. I'm just throwing out popcorn.
Right. And, I mean, painting isn't that messy.
How
it's just
about,
not.
It is when Depends. You're painting with your neighbor's blood.
Boom!
How about drywall? How about they're doing some drywall and they're trying to protect them?
I've seen these people. These people are not handy whatsoever. So they're not doing any kind of DIY project.
I don't think they're doing drywall either. Okay.
I guarantee.
Okay, so
how about, and this was my first thought, and tell me this is not a possibility, how about their beekeeping?
What? I don't think that's happening.
Is it possible? I mean, you're
inside the house?
I haven't noticed any bees.
They're beekeeping in the house?
I don't know, man.
So I told you guys on Friday,
right.
And then I go home, I fill my wife in. So now my wife's like, I think we should call the cops. I mean,
call the cops.
I mean, in this day and age, if I can prevent some sort of crime that's been, you know, happening in my neighbors, I want it. Well, what if they're chopping up people? Kevin?
Huh?
Kevin,
Kevin.
Sorry. Yeah.
He was looking right at me. What if they are?
What if they're, you know, I mean, they're doing something.
Right.
Look,
it's
Omar.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, and the more you think about it, the more you go, okay, I don't know. Any
weird.
Instance other than, you know, dissolving meth. Bodies in acid,
right.
You would need that.
Why
that's
would
where
he,
you went?
Well, I'm saying that's one of the things.
Right. Look, no one
you see?
Looks for some... more nefarious bad things happening based on skimpy or no evidence than I do. But I think there are a lot of reasons why somebody would be covered up like
you
that.
Think
a lot of things
lot
that you could do
reasons.
Inside your house.
What?
I do. I think
like
there's a lot
what?
Of reasons. Like
killing
what's that
people.
Welding. What about welding?
Welding, you don't wear one of those flimsy suits. You wear a big, heavy, like leather apron when you weld.
Yeah, welding is not. You wouldn't wear it for that.
Yeah,
cooking steak.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe in the oven.
Maybe in the oven.
Dumbasses.
Kevin, why does it sound like you're with Omar that you're convinced that it must be something illegal and wrong?
Because it's clearly something illegal and wrong.
In other words, in
you
your
want
mind,
it
Kevin,
to be so
in your mind,
bad.
In your mind there's no other explanation for somebody wearing a big suit.
Well,
like
I mean, we have talked about this several times, and you do come up with some options, but when you go painting, then it just doesn't sort of make sense.
And
it's time to start doing some recon.
It's super quiet. That house,
they're super quiet.
They're rarely in their backyard, and they're trying to redo their backyard because it's just dirt right now.
Right.
So there's shovels in the back.
Because they're always burying bodies
back
there.
I'm thinking they're burying bodies back
there.
Wow,
this is
awesome.
And
they're trying to cover up the graves with the new grass.
All right,
that's
let me ask you this, though. Can you tell when they're home and when they're not home or no?
No, they park the cars in there, so I can't really tell when they're leaving and
what
coming
time do you
back.
Need to come over? We can do some.
I think noon today, dude. We need to go.
You
and,
should at least
I'm not
go.
Sure high noon is the best time to sneak around. But
you should keep you to that garage, don't you think? Is there a window?
You know what's odd about these people? As soon as they moved in, the one thing that really struck me as odd is that not the main garage door open, the door that flips open, but the side door that's a regular door, they always leave it open. Like they're inviting people to come in so they can kill them.
Or they have a pet.
Or to they don't have a pet.
Or to let the meth fumes out.
Or right? Maybe, yeah, but I that's one of the things that I first thought about, and I went back there and I was like, took a couple of whiffs. I'm serious. And
Omar knows meth.
Yeah. And no, it's not that. It's not that. Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie The Burbs?
Yeah, I love that movie.
That was Tom Hanks' best movie, wasn't it?
I'm sure glad I'm not the one who lives right next door to him. I mean, come on, let's face it. You know, these Kopex are strange. I've been watching that house ever since they moved in. No one goes in. No one comes out. No visitors. No deliveries. What do you think they're eating over there, right?
Yeah, and they start freaking out because they can't figure it out. And in that particular movie, spoiler alert, they were right.
Yeah, they find a trunk full of bones, you know? So I don't want that.
Here's the thing, Omar. If you were to call the cops and it's nothing, how's that relationship going
to
be?
Well, they don't have to know, do they?
Oh, they won't know it's me. Yeah, they could have been whoever. Yeah, for sure.
And they don't have a relationship now.
So. But that kind of leads into what happened yesterday. So yeah. There's kind of an update, okay? So I'm taking my daughter to the hospital, so I'm loading her in into the car seat. And you know how you can feel somebody watching you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So our driveways aren't connected into each other's. His driveway is on the opposite side.
Okay.
So there's a house in between,
right.
Okay. So I'm loading my daughter in, and I feel somebody kind of like watching me. So I finish, strap her in, close the door, and I look up, and his car is on the street, stopped. And it's probably something that happened, like it stopped, but it's, you know.
Is it stopped and turned off? No, it's stopped and it's on. It's running. Okay.
But he's looking at me, and it's probably something that took 2 seconds.
Right.
But it felt like 10. So I'm there, and usually we get like a little head nod or something, but this is like serious business. We just kind of like glance at each other.
Yeah, because you were like, hey, buddy.
Like what? I know what's going on,
yeah.
Dude. Like, you know, stop now, killing people, man. I'm going to tell someone.
But now he knows that you know.
I think he does.
That's not good.
That's not good at all. So I think we're going to have to go do some killing.
Wait, what?
What?
I think we're going to have to go murder some people. I think we have to do... I got to strike first. I have kids to protect, man.
Again, I'm not sure we're at that point.
Listen.
I'm not sure we're at that point yet.
Listen, it's kill or be killed, Kevin.
What? I don't think it is.
Are you in?
Oh, shit, here we go. It's on.
It's on.
Race war.
No, I don't.
Race war's on, everybody.
I don't think it's on yet.
It's going down. Shit is going down.
I don't
race
think...
War. Come on. Race war.
I don't think... Listen, you need to poke around, though.
I do.
You need to look in the basement?
His wife's pretty hot.
You should take a...
Go away. Sorry. Yeah, you're talking about something else?
You should take him like a plate of cookies and try to get invited into the living room.
Oh, with poison.
No, I'm saying...
With poison.
So you can look around and
I can look around
going.
When they're dropped dead. I don't think we're on the same page, Kevin.
I don't either. I think we're going to call the police on you.
Why?
You said you have to kill
Listen,
before they kill
I'm
you.
I'm saving lives here, Kevin.
All right, homework.
Okay.
You need to find out more.
I do.
Yeah. You need to snoop around.
And then we could kill him?
Maybe. Maybe.
I'm telling you.
But that's down the road.
I have kids I got to protect, man.
I don't know much about cheerleading and dance routines, but apparently there is something called cheer/dance. It's a competition that goes on all over. And I don't know how popular it is in Mexico, but there's 192 teams participating in a tournament that's going on right now.
192
teams for cheer dance. It's in the news. Why? Because a cheer dance group in Guadalajara last week decided to do a Nazi-themed routine where there's swastikas on stage and they come out in what look like approximations of German Nazi uniforms and they do the Heil Hitler salute and they got the armbands on. And a lot of people sat in the audience going, I don't know how appropriate this is for girls age 10 to 16.
Well, here's my question is, how did that ever get brought up? And then, of course, they probably had to practice it a lot.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
How did the word not get out to anyone?
Yeah, someone had to make the costumes. Someone had to make
right?
the
That's
the
a
banners.
Lot of people
yeah.
that knew this was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does seem like if the girls in the competition are all 16 or under, there has to be some sort of adult supervision, right? And people have to drive them and be involved every step of the way to get them to this competition, I would imagine. But a lot of people are curious as to how that decision was made and how appropriate it was for the event. So we thought we'd find out more. We asked Dave if he could line us up the coach of the cheer dance team, and sure enough, he did. Jorge Garcia Lopez joins us on the Kevin DeBean Show right now. Mr. Lopez, thank you so much for coming on, sir.
Ah, hola. It's my pleasure to be here with you all.
I expected you to be Mexican. I'm sorry,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, I'm Mexican. Yo soy, Mexicano. Huh.
Okay. All right. Your accent just it sounds like something else. So what can you tell us about the girls in this competition?
Well, I can't believe everyone's making such a big deal out of this, you know. It's muy loco how everyone feels offended by what we did on stage.
Well, I think anybody that's sort of celebrating Nazis or Hitler...
Nine! I mean, no. we're not celebrating Nazis at all. You misunderstood.
Misunderstood. Okay.
Nunca también.
Okay, well, why don't, your Spanish is excellent, too,
thanks,
by the way.
Muchas gracias.
Yeah, because you're Mexican, of course. Why wouldn't your Spanish be
excellent? I'm a full-blooded Mexican from Guadalajara.
What? Where?
Guadalajara.
Okay. So what was the intent of the routine? Was it, were you recreating World War II? What were you trying to do? What was the message?
It was not the message so much as it was, you know, it's part of a cheer dance competition is excellence and the execution of very specific moves.
Right.
And we thought that a military theme would give the girls a chance to show how much in step they can be, in goose step, if you will, with each other, and always being exact the way things must be to keep order.
Did you not see with the swastikas and the armbands that it could look like you were maybe...
I mean, see.
Yeah. That it could be a Nazi salute that you're doing?
Well, no, it's just using the military format to show the girls in execution of specific moves, like marching and things to put to music.
Right.
That it was just a military theme. And I thought that the colors were nice.
The colors were nice.
Yeah, the red with good red and black and white.
Did you not anticipate that perhaps the Nazi theme might come back and bite you in the ass?
No. I was completely taken aback
you
by
were.
All the negative reaction from people. I mean, come on, let's get over it, right? Come on.
No, nobody's saying
that. I don't think anyone's going to get over the... I know it's been 70 years,
right,
but it's still...
Right, that's what I'm saying, 70 years
right,
until the
it's...
New Reich rises.
What? What? Did you just say the New Reich rises?
No, I said I have a new bike that I rides.
Why would you bring that up, Mr. Lopez?
I'm just really excited.
You're really excited about the bike?
My new bike. It's a 10-speed.
That's good news.
For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions.
So that happened.
I mean, I guess if we're doing the every other year thing, that's good
that's
news
right.
for Kings
yep.
fans for next year, right?
Right on track.
Sure.
How it works, yeah. All right, Tuesday morning, the great director, actor, writer Eli Roth joins us just after 7 this morning. Ralph is here now.
Where's
to
our
show
Thanksgiving, Eli Roth?
Yeah. We can't bring it up again, can we?
Yes, we can.
We hound him every time he's on.
Well,
we hound the poor man.
Then he should just do it and then stop being hounded.
He promised us that he would do it.
Right.
I think he's busy on many other... I mean, as we'll talk to him
care.
About, he's got a million... Okay.
Thanksgiving. Dark meat. White meat. All will be carved. This holiday season, prepare to have the stuffing scared out of you. Thanksgiving, white meat, dark meat, all will be carved.
Come on, that's got to be made, right?
Best movie that's never been made.
I do feel like we've been patient with him.
Yes, we have. How many Thanksgivings have passed since he first teased us with that?
Several.
Yeah. Goddamn right, being several. And that's a metric several, too. It's not an English several.
I don't
it's
know
even
to...
more.
More, okay.
Yes. All right, let's get to the show business news. Well, they didn't close down the Magic Kingdom, but they did lay it under siege. The Kardashians showed up en masse yesterday to Disneyland to celebrate the second birthday of Northwest. And I really, in retrospect, wish they had rented out the whole thing.
How come?
Because it's just nothing but... photo ops all over the internet of the Kardashians just posing For them to be at Disneyland and have everyone pay that much attention to them as they very obviously worked their way through the park in a very showy look at me kind of way.
Right.
They were gorging themselves.
They were just
on
being
unnecessarily attention.
That's what they do.
It was like feeding the gremlins after midnight and dumping water on them. That's what they were giving them. And I kid you not, look at the photos. Kim Kardashian is riding the carousel, and she is working the pole of the carousel like she is dancing at Spearmint Rhino. I've never seen anyone ride a carousel horse like she's riding it. She's got her back to the pole, and she's grabbing it over her head, arching her back with her breasts jutting, while everyone just snaps tons of photos of her as she wheels around.
Porn star Kim Kardashian.
I'm pretty sure she left the kid behind in a cantina somewhere. I don't even know where the kid was, but she was just soaking it up, and they were all there just being them. Made me a little pukey. Just a little bit pukey. Had they just rented it out, then no one would have been there to take pictures of them and make a big thing out of it.
Yeah.
Which was what should have been our first clue that was never going to happen. Because if everyone isn't there to look at them, nothing they do feels like it has any merit whatsoever.
That is true.
To do something in private is meaningless to them.
Wait, we're going to close it down? Well, then we're not going.
Right. Who's going to take... who's going to put us on Instagram? Blech. Speaking of privacy... this is an interesting lawsuit that's happening. I'll be interested to hear what happens about this. You know Gawker.com? Familiar
yep.
with Gawker? Mm-hmm. Being sued by Hulk Hogan for that leaked video a few years back that they put online of Hulk having sex with the ex-wife of Bubba the Love Sponge, radio personality Bubba the Love Sponge. Mm-hmm. They teased a little 90-second clip of it in 2012, put it on their website, and... the Hulkster threatened legal action, made them take it down, but now he is suing them on top of that for violating his privacy to the tune of $100 million.
I'm sorry, you said $100 million.
That's what I said. It's not the first time that Gawker has been slapped with a lawsuit, but every other time the case was either dismissed or settled. But this time, things seem a little different. A Florida judge has denied Gawker's motion to dismiss, and a trial is set to start next month in St. Petersburg near Hulk Hogan's hometown, so they will have to face the music in this particular case. And should Hulkster win, the president of Gawker Media says he's going to have to sell the company. They don't have $100 million,
dude. Well, if he wins, then the judgment is for $100 million, right?
I mean, yeah.
So, Ralph, we commonly see leaked celebrity sex tapes up on legitimate websites.
Right?
How do they normally get around it? Why
I don't
is this
know.
Case
Again,
different?
I don't know, and that's why I think this lawsuit will be significant in the sense that it probably will lay down some precedent for this type of tape being leaked. And what happens here, I think, will largely dictate how both websites treat that material and also what recourse the people in the videos have after the fact. I think this could be a landmark case. So we'll have to wait and see.
I just feel like somebody at Gawker should have said, hey, celebrity sex tape, yay. Oh, it's Hulk Hogan. No thanks.
You kidding me? You don't want to see the Hulkster go to work?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Did you watch it?
No, I did not.
He put in some work.
He did.
He was exhausted afterwards.
Did he pull out the pile driver? Is that a wrestling term? I felt like that was an effective joke. No?
I feel like you could judge that by the lack of any laughter.
Well, you know what you want to shoot for in comedy? It's being effective.
I feel like that was a good joke. No?
Effective is what I go for.
Yeah.
The pile driver. It's a move. It's a wrestling move, right? Or is
yes,
it not?
Yes, it absolutely is.
So why did that joke not work? To explain to me how that
it wasn't that funny.
May have been the comedian, not the material.
Okay.
Yeah. Hulkster, how do you feel about this lawsuit? How are you feeling about the whole thing?
I don't even care. I'm not even playing along now.
Oh. Dean's not going to do the one impression that he has.
Well, chap-assed.
Now I'm hurt.
All right, fine.
Come on, brother. Just do it.
I think Allie can take over the Hulkster.
Nope. Do it.
We ask him to do one thing.
Yeah,
can't even accomplish that.
He's mad at us.
Cry baby.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, cry baby.
Mad at us for not laughing at one of his jokes. It's a weird thing to get mad about.
How is he not angry all the time?
How dare you people not laugh at my jokes?
Today's celebrity birthday is John Cho is 43 years old today. Of course, Kumar. Of Harold and Kumar.
Sure.
but now probably best known to audiences as Mr. Sulu in the rebooted Star Trek franchise. 43 years old today. Eddie Cibrian is 42. Missy Peregrim. Oh, I love Missy Peregrim.
Yeah. Bell, please.
She was, of
really?
Course,
no?
Yeah. She was the adorable love interest from Reaper, and she was also in the, she's in that rookie cop show out of Canada that Dave watches. What the hell's the name of it?
Blue Bloods?
Rookie Blue. I'm Mr. Blue. Blue Velvet. Blue.
I don't know.
Bluebell.
If they were listening, he could so chime in with this information.
Yeah, but he's not listening. Blue. That's why they call it the Blues.
I think it's Blue Bloods.
Nope.
Okay.
That's that show with Tom Selleck about the family of cops.
Oh, okay.
This was a show.
Blue Bloods? Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Timely and topical.
He couldn't, if you wanted to write him, you couldn't create a character like Dave, really.
Dave, 1 minute from us saying it's definitely not Blue Bloods, what else could it be? That's when you finally chime in.
Blue Bloods!
He does good work.
Come on.
Rookie Blue?
Rookie Blue, right?
Is that what it's called, maybe?
Deacon
Rookie
Blue?
Rookie Blue on ABC?
Yes.
When Missy Peregrim?
That's the one we're talking about. Yes, thank you, Dave.
I feel like that trip wasn't worth it.
And actress Abby Elliott is 28 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Writer, director, actor. I like to think of him as a friend of the Kevin and Bean Show. Eli Roth on the phone. He's got a lot of stuff going on in theaters and on TV. Eli, how are you, my friend? What's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you. You are a busy little bee. Let's take care of the main business at hand first, and then we want to talk about some other stuff. Eli Roth presents The Stranger. So this is somebody makes an awesome movie, and you say, hey, I'm going to put my name on it and put it out there. Is that how that works?
Pretty much.
That's cool.
Guillermo, my MOA. No, it's fun. I love to champion and support independent movies and little movies that might not get out there because I have kind of a loud voice. And there are a lot of films out there that I think deserve to be seen. And this one happened to be directed by my Green Inferno and Knock Knock co-writer. Green Inferno is going to come out in September and Knock Knock in October. And he made this movie sort of while I was editing Green Inferno. He showed me the script and he went out and shot it. And I looked at it and I really, really was impressed. And the acting is great. It's a very, very creepy, cool. It's kind of one of those slow burn horror movies. It's not like terrifying. It's just very creepy and moody. But if you like vampire type stuff, it's one of those movies you find that's a bit of a discovery. So I wanted to champion it and get it out there, and it's out now on VOD and iTunes, and just look up The Stranger.
That's awesome. And is it I see that it's shot in Chile. Is he Chilean?
He is Chilean, as is a lot of the cast. I've been working down there a lot. I made Knock Knock. I shot down there, actually faked it for California. The movie is set kind of in the Pacific Northwest, and it's in English, but we started this whole thing we called Chilewood, where we've been shooting movies in Chile and kind of exporting them for the whole world. And this was a true Chilewood movie. I mean, you know, a lot of Hollywood movies cost about $200 million or $100 million. But this one cost $500,000, but it looks beautiful.
Wow.
And the movies just look and feel different down there. I think there's a really, really cool vibe, lots of great creative people.
That is really interesting. You know, one of the things about horror, and I know that it's a genre that you love very much and have revisited many times in your career, Eli, is it does seem like those movies can be cheaper to make if you just use your creativity, right? It doesn't have to cost that much to scare the hell out of people.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, the scare is the star. And that's what's fun, is there's great movies like It Follows, which is done for $1 million, or The Babadook was done for $1 million. Look at Paranormal Activity. I mean, they shot that movie for $15,000. So if you make a movie that's scary and effective and creepy and gets under people's skin, that's all they really care about. But, you know, and that's why we're shooting it in Chile. We want to do movies that don't look and feel cheap or small. But that's the great thing about horror, is that the scare is the star. And so many directors, and Sam Raimi and lots of people, they started out making horror movies because they generally always make money. And they also, you can do a lot of really fun, great, creative things in a horror film. I really think they're the best.
Now, this storyline is a guy comes to town and he's looking for who? I couldn't tell from the trailer.
He's looking for a woman named Anna, his ex-wife, and she has since died. And then he gets attacked, and people realize that there's something special about his blood, and it just builds this chain of reacts that just starts spiraling and unraveling everything in the town.
Now, we're talking about the movie called The Stranger, which, by the way, is showing at the Arena Cinema on Las Palmas in Hollywood, and as Eli mentioned, is also available on demand. Let's hear some clips from the trailer. This will give you an idea of just how scary this is.
He came to the house asking about Anna.
And you brought him here?
Don't touch my blood.
Or I'll kill you both.
We're sick.
What did you do with the body?
He wasn't dead. Why didn't you save him?
He was infected.
I don't know where you came from, but your life is gonna end.
So now you know what we are. We're humanity's death sentence.
Humanity's death sentence!
By the way, if somebody says, don't touch my blood, they only have to ask once.
Yeah,
I am not volunteering. All right, that's the stranger. New business, Eli. I had no idea what a crazy Shark Week fan you are, but you are going to be on Shark After Dark for a full week starting July 5th. Tell me about you and sharks.
Well, people know I love blood, and people know that sharks love blood. And I've been obsessed with sharks. I was Jaws obsessed. I grew up in Massachusetts where there weren't too many shark attacks. But I think they're incredible, misunderstood, intelligent beings. And Discovery actually they asked me to host Shark After Dark, which I was more than happy to do. And they sent me diving in the Bahamas. And you will not believe the footage we got. I went just diving with reef sharks. I held one. I kissed a shark. It's all on the show.
What?
Oh, my and gosh.
I was in full chain mail, and I'm in the water, and they're honestly, they're just like puppies. Like, they're like
no,
little
Eli.
Puppies.
Here's
they're
the thing about those. Honestly, they're like puppies for a minute. But then when they're not like puppies, they're really.
They're really not like really puppies not when they're not like puppies.
Were you scared at all?
Then it's like putting your head in a bear trap when it's at that point. But until that moment, they're really. I found that these reef sharks were so sweet. They completely weren't interested. There's a video online of this shark. If you look up Shark Ask Divers for Help, this shark named Lucy went to the same place I went diving. She had a rope around her neck from a fisherman. She couldn't breathe. They cut the rope off. And she comes back every day for feeding, and I actually hand-fed the shark. I met the shark. But 2 months later, the shark still comes back. She comes right up to you. When you scratch the sharks under their nose, they go into this weird catatonic state called tonic, and I did it. And I grabbed the shark. I started scratching under her nose, and she just sat there, and I held her for probably 5 minutes. It was unbelievable.
That is really sweet. Are sharks super smart? Because I just think of them as being like almost prime, primordial, just killing machines, just going more on instinct than brains.
I had the same thought. I thought they were going to be reptilian, just going looking for food. But no, it wasn't until I dove, and this is, by the way, last week. They're more like dolphins than I realized. I mean, they don't have like the personality of dolphins. And
except for when they're not like dolphins at all and they kill things. Except for that part.
Listen, what? Him and Lucy have something special.
I think you guys need, just look up on YouTube Shark Asks Divers for Help, and that's Stewart's Cove is the name of the place in the Bahamas, and you will see this shark, Lucy. It's this. I mean, what are the chances that the shark that lives in the ocean freely comes back to the same spot and comes back for feeding, and they know it. And I actually, after 2 days of diving, I recognized the same sharks. He started to see a little bit of personalities. I mean, you have to be smart and, be careful about the way you feed them. I mean, they don't really use eyesight. So when you jump in the water, you had to go in carefully because it's the splashing of your feet that attracts them. They'll go up and quickly, check. And the way they investigate things is by biting a little bit. It's almost like when you're playing with your puppy and the puppy accidentally bites you, but it doesn't mean to. That's that's really what it was like. These are reef sharks. Now, it's a tiger shark. It could have taken my hand off. But that's why when you swim with flippers, it doesn't. The sharks only attack dying fish. They won't attack a living fish. So when you're splashing around barefoot or splashing your hands, you're actually mimicking the motions of a dying fish. So when I was in the water, you move kind of smoothly and you swim in flippers and they just go right by you. They know you're alive, so they're not interested. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
I feel like this is a setup for another scary movie. It's going to come out in like a month.
I told Shark Week, if my head gets bit off, you can absolutely use the footage on Shark. I'd like totally exploit my death footage. But no, nothing happened. Sharks are amazing. I find this
so interesting, Eli, that you are a lifelong shark fan since the time you were a little kid. You've said that you always watch Shark Week. You never miss it. Yet it sounds like you learned so much in the last week that you didn't know about sharks. And that's amazing to me.
Well, the truth is, it's like with any subject. What we get from TV is only going to be the most entertaining part, which are, oh, my God, the attacks and the terror, and if you get a drop of blood. I asked them about that. I said, wait, I cut my hand. They're like, trust me, they're not interested in our blood. If it's a fish that's been cut open, then they'll all come over. But human blood, like, and these are reef sharks. Obviously, it varies. And I asked them about great whites. Like, no, a great white will eat anything. But it was incredible. It wasn't until I got in the water and saw them firsthand and had a shark come up to me kind of very sweetly, very calmly, let me hold her, scratch her nose, let me feed her, and then she went away and followed us around for 2 or 3 days. You're like, oh, look, there's Lucy. And then there's one with a hook in his mouth that they call Joker. They're like, oh, there's Joker over there. And these aren't kept sharks. These are wild sharks. So I eventually, they put me in chainmail. We weren't stupid about it, but I was swimming in the open water doing my intro. Like, my head's above the water. I have no helmet. I'm like, hi, join me for Shark Weekend. I was getting bumped and knocked around like a soccer ball by the sharks. They were just kind of checking me out and sniffing and fins going by my face, and I was just laughing.
All right.
And that's the weird thing is the sharks read your mood. If your heart is racing, then they get nervous. If you're calm, then they're calm. Like, and I asked them, I said, is it possible that these sharks know you guys and know who you are? And they said that absolutely. And the way they recognize them is by their heartbeat. It's incredible.
All right, Eli, if you get eaten by a shark before you make Thanksgiving, we're going to be really angry.
I know.
Because that's not cool. You promised.
I know. I did promise. And by the way, I also said that I would use guys as drive time morning DJs in Knock Knock, but that sequence wound up not working, so I took out the whole DJ bit. But I would love to use you in another movie. And yes, I know I did promise, and I am still working on it. I've just gotten a little bit of sidetracked at the bottom of the ocean.
Understood. All right. Well, that sounds fascinating. Shark Week's Shark After Dark starts on Sunday, July 5th on Discovery Channel. I will be watching. That sounds amazing, Eli. And Eli Roth presents The Stranger, which sounds terrifying. That's available on demand or at the Arena Cinema on Las Palmas in Hollywood. Always great to have you on the show, sir. Thanks so much for the time. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you, too.
Ashley Esqueda in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show from CNET. She is the co-host of Tomorrow Daily. Allie, you want to ask her about her eyelashes?
No.
Or are we done?
We covered that, Bean. She has incredibly long lashes. She doesn't use anything to make them that long. She was just blessed, and it pisses me off.
She's just naturally beautiful, that's all. Hey, Ashley, how you doing?
I'm good. How's everybody this morning?
We are good.
We're always great to see you. Listen, I know we have a bunch to talk about. Huge announcements yesterday. I know you were down at EA. I know you got all the E3 stuff to talk about. But you have to save me because I came on this morning and I told the guys about something I saw on your show last week about this oven that knows what food you put in it and it cooks it without you pressing any buttons.
Yeah.
And they looked at me like I was crazy. But that's a real thing, right?
Yeah. It's called the June Intelligent Oven. It has a camera and a scale inside it and it'll be out next year.
And right?
It will weigh your food. It'll look at the camera, will look at what you're cooking. So let's say it's a steak, and it will use an algorithm to figure out what that food is and then say, okay, well, this is a steak. So choose on the touch screen how you want it done. Well done, medium, medium rare, whatever. And then I will decide exactly how long this needs to cook and how hot.
So you don't have to put in time, you don't have to put in temperature.
Does the oven look at you then and go, a little less steak for you?
Probably, maybe an external camera add-on. That would be amazing.
All right. Well, that was very cool, and I definitely would look at that. So what are you excited about this week? There's so much stuff going on. Where do you want to start, Ashley?
Oh, man. Well, I call it the annual running of the nerds. It's E3. E3 is here. And this is my 14th year to betray my age going to E3. And I'm always excited every year. It's so much fun. And I love video games. And I can't wait to get my hands on a bunch of new stuff on the show floor this year and some really great franchises that are coming back. So Microsoft kicked things off yesterday morning. There were 4 major press conferences. There was also one on Sunday from Bethesda. So we saw Fallout 4 get announced, which is a huge deal. We've been waiting a long time as gamers for that. Mm-hmm. And it looks very expansive and will probably kill half of us because we'll try to be finishing it and we'll never come out. So Microsoft came out and announced something that a lot of people have been hoping for, backwards compatibility with the Xbox 360. So if you have an Xbox One or if you have been thinking about upgrading to an Xbox One, Microsoft is now giving you a really good reason to upgrade because you can put in an Xbox 360 disc. It will start an automatic download of your old games.
Chip is very unhappy with this news because she got...
Did you give away all your games like I did?
Yeah, I had to trade up to get the Xbox.
Yeah. This has been I was like, wow, it's 18 months after the Xbox One came out. So it's a little bit tough, but this is not for us. It's not for the people who bought it right up front. It's for the people who are on the fence, people who don't know, like they've been waiting for some reason to sort of upgrade to the Xbox One. Well, Microsoft, I think, has kind of given you a reason to do so if you've been really thinking about it.
Now, what is the biggest thing that's going to come out of E3?
Virtual reality is a really big deal this year.
Sex robots.
No, not quite. I think that's a different conference. Okay. I think that's a different conference. I think that's adult con. Same convention center,
sure.
different topics. So I think that virtual reality and augmented reality are a really big deal. And we're starting to see actual games instead of these sort of short demos to kind of give us an idea of what virtual reality is. We're seeing actual games like Eve Valkyrie, just, you know, space dogfighting and all this cool stuff. And we're also seeing some kind of behind the scenes looks at what virtual reality can do in gaming. And so this is going to be the year where we're going to see Oculus Rift is sort of a big player in the virtual reality game. They are having their headset released next year in the first quarter. And then we also have the HTC Vive, which is made in conjunction with Valve, who makes Half-Life and, I mean, just a lot of really great games, Portal, and they're making a headset. So I think that people are really excited about that. We also have other headsets.
When are the headsets for virtual reality going to be smaller than a little refrigerator on the top of your head?
I think that
it's absurd.
The developer kits are definitely really big, and I think the actual consumer headsets will be a little bit smaller, okay, a little bit more lightweight. It's definitely going to be the same thing as we've seen with pretty much any kind of technology, where it starts off really big and bulky. Remember those Zach Morris phones? Those used to be our cell phones. They were giant bricks. And then now we have these little tiny, beautiful, smooth computers with screens, like they're all screen.
It is funny, though, how spoiled we are. I mean, listen to Kevin describe the virtual reality machine that you can put on your head as being absurd because it's a little bigger. I mean, think about what the technology is and how amazing it is.
I mean, we watched yesterday at the Microsoft conference, they used HoloLens, which is their augmented reality headset as opposed to virtual. So it's just adding things into the space that you're looking at right now. So, for example, you guys could put on a HoloLens and maybe someday see Bean in the chair right here.
We don't need that.
Is the virtual reality moving quickly? Like, have they made great strides in the last 2 years, or is it something that's still a struggle and coming along slowly, Ashley?
I would say it has absolutely made great strides in the last couple of years. So Oculus Rift started off as a Kickstarter and then was bought by Facebook for billions of dollars. And now we are seeing this is sort of I would say this is the tipping point of virtual reality really kind of becoming a household thing. Like, people understand it. They know what it is. They can get what it's about. So, and it's not just video gaming. I mean, virtual reality can be used for
sex robots.
No, Bean.
Again with the no.
AdultCon. You can use it for things like tourism. I mean, if you've never been to a place that maybe you can't afford to travel to, maybe you pay $5 and you get a tour of the Louvre in France.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of different applications. Or maybe you can't. Maybe you're disabled and you can't skydive. And so maybe you buy that experience and you see it in virtual reality. So we're giving virtual reality really has so many applications, as does augmented reality.
Is it right around the corner cost wise for most people, or is it going to be a little while before it comes down to be actually accessible?
So we have a couple of different types of headsets. All of the virtual reality headsets that we've seen thus far have to run off of a PC. So all of the sort of hardware that is running that device needs to come from your computer. So Oculus Rift is going to require a pretty hefty computer setup. But the HoloLens is its own untethered thing. So, and that probably will cost quite a bit more. So we're going to see a little bit of both, I would imagine. And probably over time, I would guess they would find ways to sort of make them all untethered. But that's definitely sort of a 2.0 goal, I would imagine, as opposed to right out of the gate.
It's so interesting when you talked about the museum tour. I mean, think about the technology exists almost to put anybody who wants to be at the Super Bowl could be at the Super Bowl, right?
I mean, they could put you down on the grass. That's the crazy thing. And really, I think we might see things like that with yesterday at EA's press conference. They brought out Pele and he talked about FIFA 16 and his career.
How old is that guy now?
He's ageless.
He's got to be in his 70s.
He looked great yesterday.
Early 70s or something like that.
Looked great and talked about the game. And then they announced they would have female teams so you could play as a lady. I feel like this might be the year of the lady protagonist, which is pretty cool in gaming. We've got female assassins. We've got female robot engineers with little robot dogs. I mean, there's all sorts of really great games coming out. Big franchise too. Halo 5, a new Gears of War game is coming. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. We're getting a Final Fantasy VII remake, which I may have freaked out about on Instagram. I may have had a panic.
I've never heard you as excited about so many things at one time as you are today, Ashley. This really is your Christmas this week, isn't it?
It is. This truly is. This is my Christmas.
Ashley is a senior editor at CNET and the host of Tomorrow Daily on Twitter at Ashley Escada. We've got much more to talk about, including giving away some tickets for E3, and those are hard to come by. So we'll take care of all that business when we return right after this on K-Rock. 2015 E3 Expo is going on starting today at the Los Angeles Convention Center. You can go to E3Expo.com for more information, and we're going to give away some tickets right now to you at 1-800-520-1067. Five winners starting with caller 20. Ashley Escada is in studio with us from CNET. What's your advice to somebody who's never been to E3 before about how to navigate this convention?
Wear comfortable shoes. Don't start drinking before noon. And
tell people that.
I mean, it's kind of a party, but it's an industry party. So behave yourself. Don't touch the booth, babes. And
what?
Yeah, sorry.
No fun.
Sorry. And also, I mean, and also for anybody who's been a lot, like I always say, like, just enjoy it. It's so much fun. And there's sometimes we have been there so many times that it's easy to sort of get cynical about it. And I never do. It's a blast. I love it.
That's cool. All right. Let me ask you about Star Wars Battlefront, because that was another thing that everyone was talking about yesterday. Disney bought Star Wars, and a lot of people panicked at the beginning. But it seems like the longer this relationship goes on and the more we learn about their plans, it seems like people are really, really happy with the way it's going.
Yeah. I mean, we were worried when they bought Marvel, and I think that's turned out okay.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Been all right.
So now I think that with Battle... Oh, man. So not only do they have Battlefront coming, they have a new Disney Infinity. So the little... what is it? Toys to Life genre is... they're going to have a Star Wars pack, which looked really cool. And so Battlefront looks... there have been other Battlefronts before. This one looks better than ever. There was a split-screen multiplayer that I am very excited about. A lot of games now are kind of getting away from split-screen multiplayer. They're just making people have more than one console on the network to play together. So, Battlefront... looked so good. And everyone in the room last night, I was at the Sony press conference, and it was at the Coliseum, and it was packed.
At the Coliseum.
The Memorial Coliseum.
Yeah.
Jam-packed. Floor covered in chairs. I mean, this thing was...
that holds like 90,000 people?
Yeah. I would say they cut it off at a certain point. Like, so it's not totally in the round, but...
okay.
I would probably say there were so many people there. Yeah, I couldn't even imagine. I can't even guess how many people are there.
You are a journalist.
And listen, I'm a journalist. I was told there would be no math. And and so, yeah, there were so many people. And they showed, first, they kind of tricked us because they played the Star Wars music and they put up the Death Star. And everyone's like, Battlefront, Battlefront. People were freaking out. And then they were like, let's talk about Disney Infinity. And everybody just was like, you could feel the energy go down. And they're just like, okay, I guess we could get through Disney Infinity, which looks so cool. But it was like people just really wanted Battlefront right up front. And then they went on to Battlefront and showed some gameplay footage that just looks unreal. You guys can go over to CNET or GameSpot and check that out if you want. Unreal. Unreal footage. I mean, it just looks like you're just playing in the game. It just looks great.
The other game that got a lot of buzz yesterday is one that I am unfamiliar with, Ashley, but it doesn't seem like there are any games you are unfamiliar with, so you'll know. What is Shenmue?
Okay, so Shenmue is a game that the last time we saw Shenmue, it was on the Sega Dreamcast, and that was Shenmue 2. And it is kind of a long time beloved sort of franchise. I guess as a critique, I wouldn't say it's one of the finest examples of cinematic video gaming, but it's got a lot of heart to it, and people really love that franchise. So last night, which I've never seen before at E3, Sony brings out the creators of this new Shenmue game and says, we're announcing this. It's a Kickstarter. And they're like, you can go fund it right this second. Like, let's do the countdown. And they launch this Kickstarter right in the middle of the press conference. And I think...
doesn't Sony have money?
Yeah. It feels like they should. But we've seen this kind of interesting trend happening where people are launching these games that either have some nostalgia tied to them. So we saw a game called Bloodstained launched recently, actually closed recently on Kickstarter, made tons of money, over, I think, $5 million, and was the guy who originally created Castlevania, so Iga. And he...
came out and was just like, I just want to make the game I want to make, and I'm not making Castlevania anymore, and I don't work at Konami, so give me some money, and if we can show investors that we can raise a lot of money on Kickstarter, we'll get the rest of the funding.
Interesting.
And so this is sort of what we're seeing is these games don't cost. Shenmue last night put up a price tag of $2 million. That's what they want for funding. That game is not going to cost $2 million to make. It's going to cost a lot more than that.
And how long did it take them to raise the $2 million?
I believe it was, there are well over $2 million now.
Isn't that unbelievable?
From last night.
From last night. Oh, by the time I left the press conference, which I think was an hour and a half later, or maybe an hour later, I think they had over $500,000 already.
Wow.
So people just, they took down Kickstarter. The servers went down. You could not open Kickstarter, which was crazy. So people really love, I think Sony really kind of put a saddle on a tsunami of nostalgia and just rode it right into the LA Convention Center because it was like Shenmue, Final Fantasy VII Remaster. I mean, these games have so much nostalgia attached to them. I mean, I know as a gamer, Final Fantasy VII was one of the games that really got me into Japanese RPGs. And so for me, that was huge, 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 huge. And the same for a lot of people. That was sort of the game that brought Japanese RPGs to Western culture.
Ashley, how much time do you even have to play video games with as busy as you are? And do you watch any television at all, or is all your free time in front of a console?
I make the time. Okay. I don't have any kids. So my husband and I have discussed having them, and I'm like, I really like playing Mario Kart on a Saturday morning, and I'm really selfish about that, so I'm just not sure. And so right now I've been playing Splatoon, which is a shooter on the Wii U that where your kids that also are squids and you shoot ink at each other, and it sounds insane, but it is so fun, and I have been loving it to death. And I watch a ton of TV too, so maybe I don't know. I'm high on life, Bean, and I just get a lot done in one day.
Well, you're doing it right. You're doing it right. You are enjoying yourself every single day, which is awesome. And that comes across on the show, which is excellent, by the way. It's called Tomorrow Daily. You can see it on CNET. Ashley co-hosts with a man with a fake name. Are you five days a week? Is that?
It's Monday through Thursday.
Monday through Thursday.
If we did a Friday show, I might die of exhaustion.
You can follow her on Twitter, and you should, at Ashley Escada or at CNET. Thank you so much for all the information. Have fun down there at E3. We'll be watching. We'll see you again soon, okay?
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It is 7:55.
I'm worried about Ralph, man. He looks like a beaten man. He just looks like he's just like barely crawling to the microphone right now.
Well, they're just awful people.
Are you okay, dude? What can we do for you? What's the problem?
Wipe the Kardashians off the face of the planet?
Are they getting to you?
I don't think
is this job getting to you, having to cover them?
Yeah. You know, if I was in any other line of work, I could just blissfully ignore them.
Right.
Well, no one can completely ignore them. They are forced upon us from time to time. But when you sort of follow it to keep current, and, you know, they're part of the pop culture, so you want to have something to say about them, you learn they're just horrible people. And it's not even a bit anymore. It's not like, oh, they're... I don't like them because they're, you know, they're not talented, and yet they're famous, and that's frustrating. It goes way beyond that. Just to a deep level, they're just all bad people.
So now, is this beyond what we talked about earlier with all the photos they were putting up at Instagram?
Beyond the look at me fest that was going on at Disneyland yesterday when they were posing for everybody with a camera, and just this Kim, just we are feeding the monster that is Kim Kardashian, just making everything about her, and she made that all about her. She was riding the carousel in Disneyland, working the pole like she was at the Spearmint Rhino.
Like you do at your 2-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah, which is the kid like, could go on free ride. They went like on Dumbo 100 times and, you know, not having a good time. And it was all about them and their posing. Tyga's there, and they're all just making this a publicity thing, and it was repugnant. Deeply repugnant. But then my good friend Bean Baxter put the final nail in my Kardashian coffin.
How?
He sent me an article from Glamour magazine. Already we're in trouble, right? Glamour magazine asked Kim Kardashian to write herself a letter to herself in 2025. Write a letter to her future self.
Okay.
This is an exercise some people do as a chance for introspection, a chance to look at your life and evaluate where you are and where you hope to be in the future.
And usually what you do is give advice to your future self based on what your past experience is. This is what I was going through in 2015, so don't forget this part of yourself. Make this part of who you are. This is what I learned from this. Hopefully you'll do this differently. Right. A chance for introspection.
Right.
Giving the Kardashians a chance for introspection is like giving a dog a Cuisinart. They will look at you funny and not know what to do with it. And that's what happens. And they recorded this, and she has a little video on the website where she's sitting at the laptop typing and looking up in the air as if she's thinking this stuff up, and it's all done in voiceover. It's hideous. But the stuff that she does, she doesn't even understand the exercise. She starts asking herself questions in 2025 as if she's going to get a letter back. Hi, it's me in 2025. Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Yeah, we're still doing the family Christmas card. You wouldn't believe what happened this year. It's nuts. And the thing she cares about, she starts off with, I hope I'm still good at contouring my makeup.
Oh, well, that's important.
Future self.
That's important.
I can't do it justice. I'm going to play just a minute of like a 3-minute letter she dictates to herself. Here's some magic.
I trust that you will still be the queen of contouring. May science invent a mysterious and delicious green juice to keep you tan forever. We both know that there are always so many haters out there, and I just hope that you continue to ignore them and focus on everything positive. Call mom every single day. I hope we're still taking lots of family vacations together. Are you still filming Keeping Up with the Kardashians? Are you still decorating our dream home? Are selfies still a thing? Are the terms bae and on fleek so 2015? If not, am I still on fleek? Is mom still making you do the family Christmas card? If so, how are you possibly fitting everyone in? If you haven't broken the 100 billion mark on Instagram followers, I'll be very disappointed in you. Bible.
Bible.
Oh, my God.
So her are you still decorating your home? Why don't you answer me, future self? Where's the letter back?
So when she sits and thinks about where she's going to be in 10 years, her concern is whether she'll still be tanned.
Right. And whether on fleek is still a saying people are using.
This is unbelievable.
Come on, every day. Look, if there's a higher power, your mom will be long dead by 2025, first of all, Kim. And secondly, you want a magic green drink that keeps you tan all the time? Is that what you hope for the future?
Not even healthy, tan.
Right.
That's strong.
Bad people. Genuinely bad people. And you can read a 13-year-old's diary and get more depth than you just got right there.
How about Glamour magazine, though? Asking
you're right.
her to do that.
You're absolutely
Screw
right.
You.
You're absolutely right. Although it's not Time, thank God, or Newsweek or something. It is Glamour magazine. But not even just a smidgen of like self-reflection or hopes for aspirations to be something more than what you are. To aspire just to have 100 billion followers on Instagram? I hope you burn.
Nothing about her kid. Like, I hope she's happy in
yeah,
school.
Yeah, that's
hope...
what I was thinking.
Oof. Golly.
She's the best, right?
No.
Oh,
I'm trying to point out the opposite of that, I think.
I see.
The opposite of the best, whatever that would be. Let me think. Oh, worst.
Worst.
Worst, I guess, would be.
I misunderstood.
Is bae still a thing? Did Vista say bae? Am I on fleek? Bible.
Why did she say Bible?
That's their thing they say each other because it's like the truth. Instead of saying truth, you say
like
Bible.
Word.
Word, yeah, because the Bible's the truth, and so they say Bible.
Bible.
All right.
There's no God. That's all I'm telling you. It's a bleak world we live in, people. Bleak.
Bible.
Did you say fleek?
No. It said on bleak. Are you on bleak?
Bible.
Bible.
Hey,
Are selfies still a thing? Future self, talk to me. Where are you, future self? Can I just call future self instead of writing Glamour magazine? I would like just to text my future self, because I answer.
You think, You think Kim and Kanye will still be together in 10 years?
I hope they are. They deserve each other. I hope they just make each other miserable forever and ever and ever. And then it just ends in a big mutual murder-suicide pact.
Wow.
So she's cool then.
I dig her the most,
yeah,
man.
That's what I thought.
Today's celebrity birthdays, actress Abby Elliott is 28 years old today. Is she, anyone know who she is?
Yeah, she's on Saturday Night Live.
That's what I thought. She's
yeah,
very
her dad
funny.
Is Chris Elliott.
Very oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Now it's all coming into focus for me. I knew that name, and I forgot where I knew her from. But she's very funny on Saturday Night Live. I think pound for pound, this particular cast of Saturday Night Live has the funniest women ever in the history of that program.
Is that right?
It's a good batch.
I mean, bar none. The group they have right now with A.D. Bryant, who's mm-hmm. genius, Kate McKinnon, who may be the best, funniest
she's
woman ever on Saturday Night Live.
Wow.
And that's saying something. And I love Kristen Wiig. I mean, she's right up there with Kristen Wiig and Gilda Radner. I mean, all the greats. She's right up there. Who's the one who does the girl you don't want to have a conversation with at the party? Oh, what the hell's her name?
Yes.
Cecily Strong.
Cecily Strong. Yeah.
Genius. I mean, just one after another. Just an amazing cast of funny women on that
show. And Leslie Jones has brought something totally different. She's great on that show as well.
It's always a weak link in every chain.
She's good to have around for some sketches when you need that kind of tough guy character, though.
Yeah, I don't know if I want my women playing tough guys. Missy Peregrine's 33 years old today. Eddie Cibrian is 42. And actor John Cho. We love some John Cho. I'd like to be stand corrected. I'm getting lots of emails and tweets from people. When I misspoke and said that he was Kumar of the Harold and Kumar movies, he, of course, was Harold
right.
to Cal Penn's Kumar. So John Cho, of course, would be Harold.
It sounds racist.
If only someone on this show had,
I'm sorry, Ralph,
had been
I
able to point
have
that out to
pointed
me
that out
in
right
the moment.
Then.
In the moment while it was happening, we could have saved yours truly a lot of letter writing.
Apologies, Ralph. I just thought you would know that the Asian guy wouldn't be.
Well, obviously, I didn't know. Obviously, I'm just
Indian guy,
just
but
just
I
saying,
mean,
that's racist.
Just saying, you could be on fleek once in a while.
Sorry, bae. Bible.
I don't even know what on fleek means, and I don't ever want to know. Don't tell me. Don't tell me, because if I know, it'll just make me that much closer to the edge. Today's celebrity birth. I just did those.
You're a mess.
I'm genuinely flustered by that letter to the future. It's got me rattled, I have to admit. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
I hear from listeners all the time that this is their favorite part of the whole week. Tuesday mornings, just after 8 o'clock, as we welcome our good friend Petros Papadakis to the air, it's time for the Bachelorette Report.
Well, his name is Ralph Garman, and he claims to be a man. With Petros Papadakis always holding hands, kissing and hugging at sunset. Watching the Bachelorette. How can you watch that TV show? It both sucks and blows, but you watch it without any regret. Here's the update
about the Bachelorette.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Omar is on board yet.
Whatever with him.
But... Hey, P.
That was written before you guys were on board, remember?
Yeah, we used to all fight this.
Yeah, yeah. Now you just
for
roll
years.
Around in it.
We
yeah.
roll
for
around
years.
In it.
Like
yep.
the Kardashians.
We were wrong. We love it so much. Ralph, how was last night's episode?
Spectacular. P, what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, we're on a train headed toward a mountain called slut shaming that I cannot wait.
Next week, it looks
yeah.
like.
So it's hard for me, you know, I'm just kind of like, you know, waiting for Star Wars to come back, you know. I mean, I'm really into the slut shaming.
So you're watching Jurassic Park and you're waiting for the first dinosaur to attack. That's what you feel like.
I'm in a holding pattern. I'm doing hot laps. So that's what last night's show was a little bit about for me, but still wildly entertaining because, you know, it happens every year. Some guy or some girl gets too caught up in the fact that there's another dude there or girl there that they don't like, and it takes over. They can't concentrate on the bachelor or bachelorette.
I was thinking that too last night. It's crazy that none of them realized that they're repeating that same pattern over and over again. And last night it was this guy Josh who could not get past that she invited a guy named Nick from the outside to come in and join the gang a couple weeks into this process.
Right.
And he just fixated on hating that guy to the cost of everything else. The woman that was there, the relationship, telling the truth, all that matters with him is bringing this guy down. It was nuts.
If history is not what we learn from, we are doomed to repeat it.
Good stuff right there.
Pretty wise words, babe. Write that down.
This guy, Sean, also doesn't like Nick, and he confronted her early on about how he doesn't like Nick, and he doesn't understand why she brought him back, and he doesn't think that Nick is right for her. I think there may be a clue in this next clip that shows that maybe she cares more about Nick than she is leading on. Here's Sean talking to her.
I would just hope that you're smarter. I just think this guy's full of 110%.
Like, do you trust me, my decisions, or?
Did you hear that? When she called him Nick in the conversation? His name is Sean. They're talking about Nick. And she goes, Nick, don't you trust me? Don't you trust my decisions? Mm. Whoops. Ooh. Here's the clip again. I just isolated it.
Like, do you trust me?
Right there. Once again.
Do you trust me?
Yeah. So she's got Nick on the brain.
And I think Nick is a guy that, you know, he gets more than on her brain. Next week, that's my prediction.
That's who you're picking? Yeah, I think you may be right. The competition this week, of course, was they're in Texas. They're in San Antonio, Texas. So all the guys had to write an original mariachi song to serenade the Bachelorette with.
Okay.
Now, it's about humiliating yourself. Sumo wrestling at City Hall.
Boxing.
Rapping.
Mariachi. And they make it a public event so people can, almost like that woman walking naked in the Game of Thrones. That's what it becomes now, you know, just the public humiliation.
It is a constant test to see how willing you are to put yourself out there and embarrass yourself.
For what? For love?
For love. For love, man.
For all the right reasons.
Make a fool of myself for this stupid chick who's having sex with everybody in Canada twice.
Here's some clips of some of the guys. It's sort of a montage of their work.
Senorita on the search for a lover. In my arms and heart, she will find it.
Sorry. Hold on. I got lost in the moment.
I am the Frito Benito.
Caitlin, will you mariachi me?
Oh, how clever.
Awesome.
That's it was racist. Nice for that one guy, Dylan, I think it was, to go back to the racist Frito Bandito song.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they are dressed up in the Three Amigos outfits, you know. I mean, it was pretty racist already.
Then she goes on a single date with Sean, who I call Ugly Ryan Gosling.
Okay.
Because he looks like an uglier Ryan Gosling. He looks like Ryan Gosling's stunt double.
Yeah, he looks like the cross between Ryan Gosling and a giant with, like, a grotesque
face. Is this big head guy?
Yeah, big head. He's big nose Ryan Gosling.
Take it easy on people with big heads.
Sorry, P. Apologies.
And they're going kayaking, and she just can't wait to get near Sean.
I'm sorry.
My bad. This is Ian. This next clip is Ian doing his mariachi song. The reason I wanted to point this out is because Ian is a big, strapping, looks to be African-American gentleman.
Right.
And he was touting how this is going to be his event, if you will.
Oh, he's going to kill it?
Because he's got the voice. He said, I'm a performer. I can sing. I'm clever. I can write lyrics. I can bring it all. This is where I'm going to make my impact on The Bachelorette. I'm going to win her heart with this one particular event. And he goes down in flames.
If you find a partner who will love you as a woman and who has ambitions to be a better human.
I just got up there and choked. I have high standards for myself. I've set myself up to be a performer, and then I don't perform, I choke. So this just makes me look like a
The deep sigh was magical.
It does make him look like that.
He's so disappointed in himself.
He was really, really down on himself. But whenever you put the lyrics, when you find a partner that will love you as a woman in a mariachi song, I don't think success is headed your way.
It's hard to shine. And then you follow up with, I want to be a better human. It may shouldn't
well,
be this.
It does rhyme.
It does rhyme, but maybe not the sentiment that she's looking for romance. Then she does go kayaking with Sean, as I mentioned, and she has a full-on bean moment here, which I thought was a little disturbing.
I felt, like, proud to be there with Sean. Sean is so hot. He's such a babe. I love his voice. I love his smell. I'm getting creepy. That's creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy.
That's not his smell, by the way. If you've ever been to the River Walk in San Antonio, it is the smell of the stinking river.
It's the water.
which is literally 75 yards long. I mean, that kayak ride must have lasted all of 35 seconds. Like, once you go by the Hooters and the Dick's Last Resort, that's it. Like, that's the Riverwalk. I have no idea how they made a 2 or 3 minute date montage out of it.
Maybe they just anchored the kayaks in place, and they just were paddling fruitlessly.
Make it look like you're moving.
The river is not brown. It is black. I mean, it is disgusting.
Ian, we met earlier. He was the one who had the deep sigh after he choked at the mariachi moment.
Disappointed.
Ian becomes the star of this episode, P, and see if you feel the same way.
Yeah, I do feel. I mean, first of all, here's a track athlete. I mean, strapping. The guy looks almost just like Matt Kemp. I mean, he really does. Big shoulders, really reserved. Princeton track star who's overcome a bad accident to run and walk and be strapping again. And he just can't take it. He can't take the fact that she's all over all these other guys when he went to Princeton and the Ivy League, and literally his head explodes on TV. Nobody's above it.
He thinks he is better than this, quite frankly.
Oh, does he?
And he seems to resent a little fact that she's not recognizing how amazing he is. I think he wants to be pursued when he doesn't realize he's supposed to be the pursuer. And he's had an assful of her shenanigans, and he's starting to melt down. And here's Ian talking about himself.
I think a lot of women like me. I don't think that that's ever been an issue for me. And then I come here, and I just feel like I'm not being liked by the girl that I'm here to impress. I don't understand why Caitlin wouldn't want a Princeton graduate, former model that defied death and has been around the world a couple of times.
If one of these lames is better than me, then just pick one of the lames. Like, I bring so much more to the table than any of these guys here. I have a good job, good education, charisma, brains, looks.
And if that wasn't impressive enough, then I don't know what else is impressive here.
Very humble.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. What more can he be? He's asking. Right. He's got everything. He's the total package.
He's defied death.
That's right. He's like a Walenda. he's like a handsome, swarthy Walenda.
What he doesn't understand is this is a girl from Canada who cuts hair with tattoos on the back of either of her triceps, and she's really into the personal trainer smell, okay?
Yeah.
You know, so I can understand why he's frustrated after his life in the Ivy League, you know, and going around the world a couple times. But, you know, bad look on camera, though, Princeton McGee.
Look, who are we to judge, though? We're just a bunch of lames, P.
We are lames.
Well, that's what they call us. We don't know that, but that's what they call us. I learned that on a recruiting trip to Yale. That's what they call everybody who's not an Ivy League. We're all lames. Kind of like Gentiles to the Jews. We're all just lames.
We're lames. Speaking of personal trainers, how many are there on the season this year? It seems like every guy is a personal trainer.
It's the only guys that have the time in their job to take 2 months off.
So Ian has decided he's gonna pull the pin. He is not going to wait for the rose ceremony for him to get out of this thing. He is going to go out in a blaze of glory, like Butch and Sundance. He's going to come out, guns a-blazing, and he's going to take her out and then fall on his own sword. Here he is addressing how shallow Caitlin the Bachelorette is.
I feel like you're here to make out with a bunch of dudes on TV. And bringing Nick in, I don't question his intentions. I question your intentions. I really see you as a service-level person at this stage. And I wonder if you're really that shallow. Because I don't see anything beyond the surface.
That guy's a dick.
He lets her have it with both barrels, and then we get hit with the "to be continued."
Yeah, but there is something to pulling the ripcord like that, Ralph. I mean, I'm kind of with you. If you're going to go out, you know, just try to humiliate her.
I felt the same way. I mean, he is a total dick, but at the same time, I was kind of like, well, good for you. At least you're going out with a point of view. And
right, you've been put in a sumo G-string.
Right.
You know? You've sang, you've rapped, you've
did stand-up comedy.
Yeah, you've all made fools of yourselves. Call her out for what she is, and you all know what that is.
And he's not wrong about her, by the way.
No, she can't handle it. She's a tongue bandit, and next week we're going to get it. She's going to get it. We're going to hear the moaning from outside the window, and we're all going to react like eighth graders. That's my favorite part.
All right, good times. We will count on it. We will look forward to it. Thank you, Petrus.
Good night.
Thanks, Pete. Give a little of that theme song that we love so much. Orange is the New Black just returned for season number 3 on Netflix last Friday. Alan McKay, is it true you have already seen all of season 3?
Listen, I didn't plan on it. I watched episode 1. It hit me right in the gut. And then I thought, there is no stopping me. And it's a sickness. Like, it's a problem. But my God.
It's quite a show. It's the one that put Netflix on the map, and we could not be more excited to welcome one of the very fine actresses from the program. Yael Stone joins us in studio right now. She is Lorna Morello. Hi, Yael. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much.
Such a pleasure to have you on. We've had a couple of your colleagues in over the past couple of seasons, but it's always fun to get a chance to meet another one of the inmates. So, first of all, we apologize for the fact that you had to talk to Dave, our producer, for the last 20 minutes of the office. Did he just pepper you with questions about Australia?
He is a really fantastic human being. He has a keen interest in wombats. And
keen might be an understatement. It's troubling.
Well, you know what I realize? He kind of looks a little like a wombat, too.
Yes, he does.
But I mean that with the greatest love. You know, I think they're a very cute animal, so I say that as a compliment.
He's our little wombat.
Yeah, I think you should rename him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I like it. Is it annoying for you that so many people want to talk to you about Australia? Because most Americans have not been to Australia, but it's a country that we're fascinated with, and we've seen it portrayed so often in film and in movies. I feel like we always have a lot of questions about it. Does it bug you that people always want to bring it up?
No, it's nice to talk about home. You know what it is? It's just so far away. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's so, for a lot of people, I think it becomes like a dreamland place because they're like, one day, one sweet day, I'll go to Australia because it is so far away.
And yeah, because it's not the type of place you go for even a week's vacation because it takes so long to get there. You want to wait until you have the time to properly enjoy it. You know, it's like the size of America, right?
Exactly. It is huge. It is huge. And I think it's one of those things that you have to like, you know, commit to. You have to go backpacking for 3 months to really get your feet dirty.
So you were acting back home and had a little bit of a career going. Was the plan always to try to get to Hollywood, or was there a time where you thought, wow, there's a lot of opportunities in movies and television in Australia, I'll just live here and be an actress here?
I had a really wonderful and very fulfilling time in Australia. I was very, very lucky and had a very rich experience both in theater and in television, but really grounded a lot in my theater experience. And it was that experience that took me to New York, which is where I now live and where we make the show. So I was kind of brought over with the production, Diary of a Madman, and it was myself and Jeffrey Rush, and we had a wonderful season at BAM in Brooklyn in New York. And it was kind of, I don't know, it was the middle of winter. I landed in this strange place, and I was suddenly working in this amazing town to these amazing audiences with this amazing man. And I thought, wow, this is scary. This is really scaring me. And that's what I was looking for, actually, at that point.
Scaring you in a good way. Like this.
In a great way, yeah.
I don't know what to expect, but I like that.
Exactly. How soon after that were you offered Orange is the New Black?
I made some decisions, some big decisions about leaving home, which was really scary for me, to be honest. Like, really cutting a lot of professional ties and kind of wandering out into the world of waitressing. And it was 4 months. It was 4 months from arriving. And, yeah, I was a very lucky.
But that's a rocket ship, though, to get on a show like this.
I was lucky. I do have my fingers constantly crossed. I really felt very lucky, and it's been a crazy
I understand why you said yes. Yes, because you read that first script and thought, this is wonderful work. But you must be, and I imagine many of your colleagues are shocked at how big and how popular the show is. I mean, it is a massive, massive hit. No one predicted that at the outset, right?
Yeah. I mean, also, you have to remember that we were making this Netflix show, which was kind of like, oh, well, I hope people, you know, enjoy this internet streaming program. So I think we felt like we knew we were having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. That was very clear. We were having a lot of fun. We knew it was special because all you needed to do was walk on set, look around, and look at the incredible diversity in the cast. Look at how many women were on set, in front of the camera, behind the camera, in the writer's room, creating the show. I mean, it was very clear we were doing something unusual. So there was no question about that. I think there's always that unknown factor of, are people going to, is this going to touch people? Is this going to connect? And
well, and the fact that it was Netflix 3 years ago or however many years
Netflix
it's been.
Netflix owes you. Let's be honest. Let's just put it out there right now. You made Netflix.
No comment.
So, I'll say
how
it.
Long
true.
After the series debuted season one did you start to realize the impact?
I was with Uzo, who plays Crazy Eyes slash Suzanne. We don't like to call her Crazy Eyes too often. And we were walking down the street just after season one had dropped, and it became very clear from walking down the street.
The people were yelling and responding and
just that there was a real connection. People were coming up and saying hello a lot. And that was really wild. That was a very strange feeling because, as I said, we were having such a beautiful time. It felt so private. You know, we were kind of just, you know, having fun playing together, creating these wonderful characters and having a great time. And then that next step of, oh, other people are enjoying
people
this.
Are actually responding to this.
Yeah, yeah, people like our crazy stuff.
Now, in terms... Think,
yes, go ahead, Ellie. Sorry.
In terms of you, I'm looking at you. You're a tiny woman. You don't have the red lipstick on, and you have an Australian accent.
It's true. All these things are true.
All those things are true. Can you get by with people not giving you the double take? Because if I walk past you, I'd say, oh, she's adorable. I wouldn't say, oh, my God, it's Morello. It wouldn't hit me right away.
No, no. I think I have been able to maintain a little kind of secrecy about that. But there is there are a lot of fans out there that have keen eyes, I got to say.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always very impressed. And I do get that funny moment on the train where people, because I, you know, I'm in New York, I catch the train all the time, where people will do that double take and I'll be like, oh. Oh, they got
there
me.
It is.
There it is. There it is.
They're like, hey, congratulations, you got out of prison. That's so nice.
Yes. There has been that as well, you know, that kind of sense of, you know, establishing that you're not the character. Because I think, you know, with Netflix, we take our computers or whatever it is into bed and we watch six episodes in a row. And so you start to feel, I mean, it happens to me too, and I'm work on the show.
Right.
Like, I feel this very personal connection with the characters. So people, when they do approach you on the street, there is a sense of like, what are you doing outside of the prison?
Yeah.
How's Christopher?
You're out of context for them. Well, we're talking to actress Yael Stone from Orange is the New Black, which is all three seasons are streaming on Netflix right now, by the way. It's such a beautiful show. It's such a funny show. It's such a dramatic show. There's never been a program that I can think of that has had more different, phenomenally fully fleshed out female characters either, by the way. I mean, that's one of the things that's just remarkable about it. We have so many more questions about your time in prison, Yael, when we return right after this on K-Rock. Actress Yael Stone in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. She, an actress from Orange is the New Black on Netflix. She plays Lorna Morello. Tell us about Lorna. What have you learned about her over the past three seasons, Yael?
She's a sweet girl. She's got some secrets. I'm very protective of her. I feel I have never felt so affectionate towards a character as I do towards Lorna. I'm very invested in her growth. I think she's on a good path, but she's had some rocky moments. I do think she has been very alone in the world. I think she's kind of not grown up with a lot of love and a lot of support, so she's had to kind of invent a lot of fantasy to support herself. And, you know, I think a lot of us do that. I think that's
Do you think she's mentally ill?
I do. I think that at her time of stalking, that's certainly what was going on. I think she kind of descended into a place that was not healthy. Certainly not healthy. I mean, she's threatening people's lives.
Yeah,
tell me about playing this character who most of that stuff you would watch and go, okay, that person's a bad person, but you're loved. Oh. That's a strange reaction.
Well, that's a very kind thing for you to say, and I do feel that. I feel a lot of compassion for the character, and across the board, I feel a lot of compassion for the characters. I mean, people just adore these women, and I think that that is a testament to Genji's incredible writing and her team of writers, because what they've allowed us to do is meet these women as people first and foremost, see the intricacies of who they are, see where they've come from, and then we learn about their crimes, then we learn more more about what landed them in prison. So there is a sense of like, well, this led to this, led to this, mm-hmm. you know, and Genji also acknowledges a kind of larger socio-political world at play. You know, we get to see where people come from and why they make the decisions they make. And I think that allows us to have a lot of compassion for these women and you know, for not just the inmates, for the guards as well, who've done some pretty questionable things too.
And the timing of the backstories, the way that she weaves those in and out, right when you start kind of not rooting for one in particular, you see the backstory and you're like, oh, everything makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's this whole new dynamic with the show. It's just so brilliantly done. Mm. And your backstory that people would know from previous seasons, if you will.
Sure.
It plays so much into this season where essentially you're just looking for love and you're looking for that connection, not only through the other women there, but through pen pals, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that.
If you haven't seen the current season or the last season, don't listen to this. Yeah.
Okay, I'll be back in a minute, you guys.
See ya. So Lorna does ache for somebody. She mm-hmm. wants to, I think she needs to kind of feel validated with love and affection before she can sort of move on. And she wouldn't be alone in that. So she is always kind of reaching out. Sometimes she reaches in the wrong direction. And I think we've seen that in the last season, certainly with her obsession, her really incredible obsession with Christopher. And you know, she sometimes bypasses the things that are really valuable. So perhaps someone like Nikki is someone you actually want to draw in closer into your life. You know, she gets distracted by the shiny things. and in season 3, I think, you know, I haven't seen it myself, but not yet. I'm going really slow.
Ask me anything.
But she is, you know, she's reaching out and she's trying to find a solution. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of us, it feels like groping in the dark, you know, and sometimes she gets it wrong, sometimes she gets it right. She's sort of constantly improvising with life. Nothing's certain.
Well, we have a clip from season 3 of the Netflix series Orange is the New Black. Allie, you want to set this up? I think this is Lorna talking to one of her pen pals, right?
Yeah, she's been reaching out, trying to get some love back, and then they visit her, and she keeps telling the same story, but switching it up to accommodate whatever they like. Do they like birds? Great. So does she. Do they like anime? Wonderful. This guy digs guns, and shockingly, so does she.
And that is how I pull off the biggest jewel heist in Chandler, Arizona.
I gotta say, you are the cutest gunslinger I've ever met.
Thank you so much. And I do love guns. I'm the old ones. And the newer ones.
I'm saving up for a 1962 Remington 700. That's the year that came out. Push feed action, 3.2 millisecond lock time.
Oh, just hearing you talk about that makes me want to go out and shoot something.
Oh, I think I'm actually blushing. Is that happening?
That's so cool. Hey, how much have you heard, Yao, from, if at all, from people who have either been in prison or had family members in prison about how realistic this show is?
I have, over the years of working on the show, luckily had more and more contact with people who have come out of prison and, you know, and reached out. And I have to say that is the most moving part of this kind of fan response, because there is a real sense of people saying thank you, and a sense that we are authentically representing that world. And of course, you know, this is entertainment and we stretch things in certain directions, but there really is a sense of people saying thank you. And, you know, anything that brings this conversation about this particular system to the forefront is a wonderful thing. And I know that, you know, as I interact with people from the WPA, the Women's Prison Association, Liberation Prison Yoga, which brings yoga into prisons for inmates, I've had more and more contact with people who need their stories to be told, and we need to have a greater discussion about this. You know, as an outsider, obviously I come from Australia, and you know, we share some similar difficulties in terms of a prison situation. And I, you know, the US has one of the largest prison populations in in the world. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we can kind of bring this conversation onto the table by way of entertainment, I think is a really wonderful and valuable thing. We had a fan event in New York last week, OrangeCon, and I was lucky to be sitting next to Piper Kerman, who wrote the memoir, which Orange is based on. Mm-hmm. And that's her life, you know. Yeah. And somebody in the audience said, Piper, you know, all of this wonderful stuff has come from you being sent to prison. You know, if you could go back and change a thing, would you? And I think the person who asked that question expected her to say, no, I wouldn't change a thing. And without skipping a beat, Piper said, of course I would. Of course I would change this. You know, I put my family through hell. It was a terrible, terrible experience. The shame, the guilt, the difficulties that most people who emerge from a prison or jail experience come out with is just truly crippling for their life. So I think the more that we can kind of talk about this, the more that we can interact directly with people who've had that experience, maybe there's a little change possible. Maybe if it's just a greater awareness, a greater sensitivity, a greater compassion, I'm thrilled.
Well, as Ali said earlier, with the Baxters, we're getting to learn about the people. Is you remind us that prisoners are human beings too, and
yeah,
they've had difficult journeys.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and they're not just numbers, and they're not just, you can't just put them over there and go, hey, they're just bad people, and I don't care about them. And you're right. That's one beautiful thing that this show has been responsible for getting back into the conversation. I wish we had more time. I can't believe we have to say goodbye already. But man, congratulations on all the great work you and all the ladies are doing, and the men that work on the program as well. There are a few of them.
Yeah. There's a few, and they are delightful. They're wonderful men. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been really,
real
really fun.
Pleasure.
And there'll be more. Have we heard news? There will be more seasons.
They've actually started. I'm going to rush back to New York at the end of this week.
No kidding.
Yeah, they've begun shooting season 4, and I think it's going to be amazing.
Well, I speak for other binge watchers. Hurry up. Thank you.
Let's get to that.
106.7 K Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:57.
Well, she was adorable, by the way. She was a lot of fun.
After the interview, she walked over and said, oh, I didn't even see you back there, Chip.
Well, most people say that, don't they?
But she's 5 foot.
She's a field mouse.
Chip is practically the elf on the shelf at the show. Hey, Tuesday morning, Rob is here. Time for another look at the Showbiz Beat on the Kevin and Bean Show. What you talking about?
What's the best part about being a beloved movie star?
Partay.
Where Bean's mind goes automatically.
Sure, that's him.
Sorry, I was answering a different question. What's the best part about being a movie star?
Penis.
No,
I would imagine it's getting the opportunity to make a living in the craft that you presumably love, which is why you got into it.
Nope.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Any other guesses?
Fame or money?
Nope.
Okay.
Boning?
Nope.
Being able to give to charitable places? I'm really tired.
That petered out a little.
As charming as it sounds to give money to charitable places.
I'm dying.
It's none of those?
It's none of those.
Wait, who
is
it talking about?
Is it meeting your idols?
Nope.
Okay.
I got a story that's going to tell you the best thing about being a beloved movie star.
Okay.
Okay.
You can crash into people's cars and they are happy. They're happy about it.
Oh my God, it's you? This is great?
Yes. Imagine the power that is. Imagine you're Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and you sideswipe a dude's truck and knock his rearview mirror clean off the driver's side. Just wipe it out. Just shatter it. Destroy it.
That seems bad.
That's a bad thing. For any one of us, that would be bad, right?
Right, right.
So Rock flips a U-turn, drives back to the scene, and he sees the guy walking across the street to his truck, and he says, "Sir, is this your truck?" And the guy says, yes, it is. Why? He says, well, I got to tell you, I just sideswiped it and knocked the hell out of your mirror, and I may have done even more damage. And you give me your info, and I'll leave you mine, and I'll take care of everything. And he went, wait a minute, you're The Rock! And he said, yeah. So this is going to be the greatest story ever, the guy says. Pulls out his camera. They start taking pictures. Yeah, they're laughing in the middle of the street. All big belly laughs and hugs and high fives and thumbs up in the camera. This guy could not be more pleased to have the crap kicked out of his brand new truck. Couldn't
Thank
be happier.
Thank you so much for running into my car, Rock. This is awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Rock says the guy broke out in a huge smile. Well, this is going to be an awesome story. They started belly laughing and pointing at the mirror in the picture and laughing about it.
Take a selfie with the mirror.
Couldn't be happier, this guy. Made his day. That is the power of being a movie star.
That's pretty strong.
You can take the worst and make it the best. You can take the worst thing
which would be in the average person's life, and you make it the best thing that's ever happened to them. That's the power.
Plus, he saved all those people in that helicopter when the earthquake happened, too. Let's not forget about
just
that.
Just in a movie!
Oh. It's just a movie.
That's the power.
It's pretty
very
cool.
Impressive. Blows me away.
That's a terrible story from if anyone else did it. You go home and you go, I can't believe somebody took off my mirror.
Something you would tell everyone was the effing worst day of your life for a long time. And this guy is just can't wait to tell his parent, his family and his friends and his parents exactly what happened to him. He's going to bronze that mirror. He's going to pick it up and he's going to put it in a case. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's power, man.
It's not as good as giving giving money to charitable
places. No, I agree.
I'm tired.
Who's going to be the next James Bond?
Who's going to be in it, or who is the next?
Who's going to be the next James Bond? Who's going to be the next 007? Here's why.
Now we're not anywhere near ready to get rid of Daniel Craig. Are we?
We're pretty pleased with him. Craig is believed to be contracted for just one more Bond film after this upcoming Spectre. That's it, and he has no interest in continuing the character.
Is that right?
So already they're starting to set the wheels in motion and choosing his successor.
Kevin James.
Yeah, can you imagine Bond running into a really clean sheet of glass, Kevin? He'd be so happy if that happened. Bond on a Segway. James Bond mall cop.
It would be everything all in one.
It'd be everything you ever wanted.
Pretty sweet.
If he fought dinosaurs, then it would be the perfect movie for you. UK bookmakers have released the odds for the next 007. Michael Fassbender is the long shot at 7-1.
Long shot.
All right, easy. Henry Cavill, who I don't think can play James Bond.
I don't think so either.
You can't be Superman and Napoleon Solo in the new Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie and also James Bond. Can you? You can't be everyone.
I don't think so.
Tom Hardy's 4-1. That would be an interesting choice. Hardy's got the
yeah, he does.
He's got that.
He does have rrr. He has rrr.
You could knock your rearview mirror off and you'd be like, that's okay, Tom Hardy. Just don't hurt me.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. But Idris Elba famously has
he's been talked about for a long time, yeah.
5-2. But the favorite, I'm stunned at going off at 6-4.
Can I guess?
DJ Qualls.
You got to bet $6 to make 4. DJ Qualls. Yes.
DJ Qualls is a great guess.
Is that a surprise?
What about
love?
What about Chris Pratt?
No.
Think about it. They're talking about him playing Indiana Jones. He's the Jurassic World guy.
He's
the Guardians of the Galaxy guy.
I dropped my hat. Where's my whip?
What I'm saying is he's a better actor than anybody suspected, and he could probably play cool, too.
Wrong.
I feel you have to be debonair. There has to be, in all of my Bond watching, I think.
Says someone who's never seen a Bond.
And you got to be Uke. You can't be
British.
Yeah, you got to be from the UK. You can't be an American and play James Bond. Silly.
All right, I got it.
Meatloaf. All right, now see, it's 9:04. Now you're gonna burn my time up with Meatloaf. Really?
Is it not Meatloaf?
It's not Meatloaf.
All right, we give up then.
They say the best odds are for Damian Lewis from Homeland,
Sergeant Brody. Okay.
Interesting. Also from Life, of course. He was on that show as well.
I could see that.
I don't know if I can. A ginger Bond?
I was just going to say, he's a little too freckly, maybe.
I don't think we can have pale ginger Bond.
I support pasty people, but I don't.
We've just gotten over a blonde Bond. Now they're going to make us have a ginger Bond? I say nay. I vote nay.
Do they give you
ginger
a vote?
Kids, children with red hair, light skin, and freckles. They creep us out and make us feel sick to our stomachs.
Right. Exactly. It's crystallized my thoughts perfectly. Celebrity birthdays. John Cho is 43 years old today. Eddie Cibrian turns 42. Missy Peregrine from Reaper, of course, and Rookie Blue is 33 years old today. And actress Abby Elliott from SNL is 28. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 9:41.
Anyway.
Hey, Rodney.
If you want to happen to see what I've been doing or hearing,
I want to happen
what's
to
on
see
my
it.
Webpage or checking it out. What? You can go to Facebook.
You have to go to Facebook to get your webpage.
Facebook.com/ROTRKROQ.
ROTC?
And that's the official Rodney on the Rock webpage.
Facebook.com/ROTRKROQ.
All one word. Anyway, I'll be back right after this.
It's not a word.
We'll be here.
It's not a word. ROTRKROQ isn't a word.
No.
It stands for Rodney on the Rocks.
Can't tell Rodney anything. Hey, it's time for the final look at the Showbiz Beat here on a Tuesday morning Kevin and Bean Show. What the hell is going on with you, Ralph?
Before I beat you, let me treat you. Ha ha! I had a dime every time I said that.
You'd have a dime.
I've got passes to the very special K-Rock screening of a movie called Ted 2.
Yay!
This movie's in theaters everywhere on June the 26th. But you, my good friends, will get to see it on June the 23rd at Pacific Theaters at the Grove if you know the answer to my trivia question. Ted, of course, wildly successful film starring Mark Wahlberg and, of course, Seth MacFarlane as the voice of the lovable teddy bear come to life, Ted. Mark Wahlberg's character in the movie is named John Bennett. John Bennett is his character's name. I would need to know from you, what beloved American actor played John Bennett's father in the first movie, Ted? The first movie, Ted, what beloved American character actor played John Bennett's father in the movie, Ted? If you know the answer, call me now, 1-800-520-1067.
I can't remember anything about that.
It's a number to call if you remember what beloved American character actor played Mr. Bennett, John's dad, in the first Ted film. I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to go see Ted 2. Call me now, 1-800-520-1067.
I sort of remember that scene. His parents were standing in the kitchen, but the actor, he barely stuck to the film. I mean, it was like you see him, but then you forget about him the second his face leaves the screen.
George Michael's back in rehab. The German magazine Bild, B-I-L-D, Bild, says he checked himself into a facility in Switzerland. Ha-ha. He's going to need rehab from chocolate after that trip, right? Who's with me, ladies?
Wow.
Because Switzerland's full of delicious chocolate.
Oh, right? Okay.
So he'll be trading one addiction for another. Right?
What's wrong with you?
Who's with me?
Bet he can get his watch fixed while he's there, huh? Am I right?
Cuckoo clock. George apparently has issues with alcohol and drugs and...
Name it.
Falling asleep behind the wheel of cars.
Crybaby.
He's a crybaby. what's the last time he made music? Anybody remember when he used to make music?
He had a very short-lived live tour, didn't he, Kevin?
Yes.
That got canceled after a few dates. That was his latest public foray, but he's been essentially just staying home and doing drugs for 20 years.
Boy, I can't remember a bigger fall from grace of a guy who was white hot, the biggest music star in the world for a moment, and then went to zero. Nuts.
Yeah, that's a lot of wasted brain cells right there. That's a real
lot of talent.
He was so talented.
I mean, if that's your kind of music, you like dance pop kind of stuff, I mean, he was the king of it. Let's see if we have a winner for my trivia question. Movie Ted, the first film Ted, what actor played John Bennett? Of course, Mark Wahlberg's character. What played a young John Bennett's father in that film? Carlos in Anaheim, your answer, please.
Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald. From Mad TV?
Yeah.
No, Carlos, that is not the correct answer. Thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
I tried to get him. He declined.
Good guess. We'll wait until we have a correct answer.
Well, do we have time?
We'll go back to that when we get a correct answer.
Somebody will look it up. Somebody will find it on YouTube and scroll to the credits.
A lot of movie stars are hitting the boards, as we say, in the theater. You know, a lot of movie stars and TV stars, like Bradley Cooper, famously, is now playing the Elephant Man on stage. Benedict Cumberbatch is about to take on what's known as, perhaps, the role for an actor in London. He'll be playing Hamlet in the play of the same name. Production opens on August the 31st and runs through October the 31st. When tickets went on sale for this, now you know tickets for a play, you can get them pretty much day of if you want. If you want to go see something.
Right.
On Broadway or here in Los Angeles. The day the tickets went on sale in 2014,
This engagement was announced a year ago.
Okay.
33,000 people lined up outside the box office to buy tickets.
Wow.
It sold out in a matter of minutes. Unheard of. That's how beloved this Bumbershoot is, this fella, this Bumbershoot
Benedict
guy.
Cumberbatch.
If you can't get to London, they're going to do a very cool thing. The National Theater Live is going to broadcast Hamlet to movie theaters all over the world on October the 15th. They're going to do a special performance that they will beam via satellite into movie theaters, and so you can sit in the comfort of a movie theater and see Benedict Cumberbatch play Hamlet.
That's cool.
Wow.
All right.
Benedict Cumberbatch, by the way, did not play John Bennett's father in Ted. Some people were guessing that. It's not the case.
Not. Keep guessing.
Still looking for that answer for what beloved American character actor played John Bennett's father in Ted, the first
Maybe
Ted.
Drop beloved? That might be throwing people off.
Why don't you drop this right here? Drop this thing right here that I'm pointing at. Why don't you drop that?
Hey, Ralph, serious question. You made reference to how many Bradley Cooper's a great example, Benedict Cumberbatch. Why do they take away from the time they could be making $10 million to make a movie to make $300 a night on stage doing a play for 40 people?
First of all, it's not $300 a night and it's not
That's
40
That's not a loaded
people.
Question, first
Not
of all.
At all. You're not skewing that at all into any
No, I'm
weird,
not trying to skew,
weirdness.
But clearly they're making a lot less money for something that a lot fewer people will see. You guys will grant me that's true.
Yes, but
that's all
it is a much more satisfying exercise for an actor to perform on stage than it is in any other medium. And that's why people do it, because they can. They can play great roles on stage because of their fame in other media. And this is their chance to do something that they really love. The theater is the actor's medium, meaning that you got on stage and for 2 hours, it's just you. You control the performance. You control how the audience reacts to you. It's you up on the stage, and you are the final editor, director, actor.
I can see that.
You're everything on stage. You're in control. If you're doing a TV show or movie, you are at the mercy of editors and directors and what take they're going to use and the music and the lighting and all the other stuff. But when you get on stage, it's pretty much you and your audience, and you get to control that experience. And a lot of actors covet that.
Gotcha.
And that's why they do it, because they can. And they don't need the money, because they've already made their millions doing other stuff. So for Bradley Cooper, I'm sure he's just enjoying doing it. And that's why he wants to. It's hard work. It's a lot harder than, you know, doing a TV show or a movie where you just work at little chunks. You know, you shoot 15, 20 minutes at a time sometimes, and
right.
You go sit in your trailer for an hour and a half and wait for the next setup. So,
and this is, you know, 2 hours solid.
Yeah, exactly. Do we have an answer to my trivia question?
Nope, we don't yet. We have someone who's willing to take a guess.
I think Adrian in Pico Rivera has a guess, perhaps.
Hey, Adrian.
Yes.
Adrian.
It's the upcoming star, the man with the nine voices, Ralph Garman.
Thank you, Adrian. That's right.
I don't remember.
Character actor Ralph Garman played Mr. Bennett in the first Ted film.
He's an actor, Ralph Garman?
He is.
I don't
Some
remember.
Some say actor extraordinaire.
I've never heard that.
Well, he's wildly popular in Europe.
Okay.
Maybe that's why you're not familiar with him here in the States. Hold on, Adrian. I'm going to give you tickets. You're going to see Ted 2, okay?
Thanks, man. You guys are the best.
Thank you, sir. Congratulations also to Aaron and Daniel and Sal and Katie, who also knew the correct answer to that trivia question.
I don't think that's right.
Which is the longest we ever had to ask anyone for anything ever.
Doesn't sound right.
You know, you give and you give and you give. This is why I do Broadway. Because this kind of reaction. This is the reaction I get on radio and in film, but on Broadway, I can't walk down the street. I can't walk down the street in New York because I look like a good victim. So I get mugged very easily in New York. That's why I can't walk down the street.
This Saturday at 1 p.m. on Antenna TV.
Antenna TV?
I'm going to be on The Monkees.
Oh.
When I was a kid.
What?
The
show's been off the air for 50 years.
Or movies or whatever was The Monkees.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I played on The Prince and the Pauper. And that's going to be at 1 o'clock Saturday on Antenna TV.
On Antenna TV. That means I need an antenna to get the station?
I have to check listings to find out when it's in the town near you.
Well, I'm in Los Angeles.
And you said town? 1 o'clock on Saturday. Why do I need to check listings?
June the 20th, The Monkees. Because they've been showing The Monkees every
right.
Saturday. They show two episodes.
Uh-huh.
1 and 1:30.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. 1 o'clock this Saturday.
Okay.
At Prince and the Pauper.
Okay.
And you'll see yours truly.
I'll see Rodney on The Monkees.
I'll see the back of your head, Rodney. I happen to know the episode he's talking about.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's one of those episodes where Davy Jones runs into this prince from another country who looks exactly like him.
Right.
And the prince doesn't want to live this highfalutin life, and Davy Jones wants to be a prince, so they swap places because they're identical strangers.
Okay.
And so in a lot of the scenes, Davy Jones is talking to himself in the scene.
Right.
And what they do is they had Rodney stand there with his back to the camera, and he played the back of Davy Jones's head.
That's a pretty specific role.
He was his stand-in, and Davy would talk to him. Then they'd flip the coverage, and Davy would change costumes and be the other character, and then talk to the back of Rodney's head again. So when he means he's in the episode, he means you can see his hair.
That's awesome.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Abby Elliott of SNL fame is 28 years old today. Actress Missy Peregrim celebrates 33 years on the planet. Michael McDonald, that guy from Mad TV, really? That's who that guy thought played?
Well, I mean,
played Ted's dad?
I still can't. I'm still trying to.
Michael
maybe
McDonald?
The Alex Borstein confused him, maybe?
Oh, yeah, maybe. She did play Mrs. Bennett in that scene.
Her, I remember.
Yeah, sure. She was
great.
Yeah,
she stood out.
Eddie Cibrian's 42 years old today, and actor John Cho celebrates his 43rd birthday. How much time do we have? Not much. It's new release day. I was going to give you a couple new releases, but just to let you know, CD-wise, Third Eye Blind has a new album out called Dopamine, if you want to pick that up.
Third Eye Blind.
Yeah. No? No interest. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Help you with that. Tomorrow morning, we're going to talk some sports, as there's a lot of it going on. The NHL playoffs are over, unfortunately. The NBA playoffs continue with Game 6, I believe it's tonight, in Cleveland. So that's going to be fascinating. The Women's World Cup, by the way, is on at 4 o'clock,
oh,
Ralph, on Fox.
Really?
Yes, really.
Is that husband beater? Is she still in the game?
She is. She's U.S.'s goalie.
Okay.
It's nephew, alleged.
Oh, the nephew's one she beat up? I thought you beat up her
allegedly,
husband, too.
Yeah. We also have Doug Benson, comedian Doug Benson, in the studio tomorrow as well. We've got more tickets for you to go see Ted 2 starring that actor. Oh, wait, that actor's not in it, is he? Hmm.